Power to you, people. It is the Starship Rokon Show with Anna DeBlantis. Off for another day of broadcast insolence.
It's FISA Friday, and the groundhog saw his shadow. So we have 6 weeks of winter, 6 weeks to prepare for bathing suit weather.
I have to tell you that I had a lot of fun reading the groundhog, the history of the groundhog.
The history
today,
of the groundhog.
Yeah.
You were doing that today?
Yeah. Why is the groundhog important? And it turns out...
The Punxsutawney Phil just, groundhog? It turns out the whole idea?
The whole thing's made up.
Oh, really?
That's the whole point.
The weather rodent doesn't really tell us the weather.
Yeah, it does not tell us the weather at all. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But, obviously, gigantic breaking news in Washington, D.C. is this memo has been released by the House Intelligence Committee, at least by Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee, which... claims, and let me just try to get to the basis here. And if you just heard in the news that the FBI overstepped its boundaries by continuing to ask for an overhear warrant of a U.S. person, a foreign surveillance warrant, essentially of a U.S. person, based on this memo, this dossier that was put together by Fusion GPS, and they claim was a political document, not an intelligence document. And so, therefore, all hell is broken loose. Now, the question was, the president was in a spray today talking about how awful everything is and how this everybody should be embarrassed. And then they asked whether Rod Rosenstein is still in favor. And he says, well, you'll have to judge that, or you'll have to decide that.
Right.
And Karen Travers is at the White House for ABC News and joining us right now on the satellite. And Karen, what are we to take of that? I mean, what are your sources telling you about the future of Rod Rosenstein or anybody else that might be in the FBI or in Department of Justice?
You know, a lot of the questions in the lead up to today were focused on the FBI director, Christopher Wray, because we know that he was making a personal case to the administration to not release this memo. He was saying that he has big concerns that the conclusion the Republicans came to is misleading, and that the information that they used to get to that conclusion is not the full picture. Notably, that's also the argument that the Democrats have been making over the last couple of weeks, you know, using the phrase cherry picking of what information that they had to reach a conclusion that everything is biased. So Christopher Wray had been the focus. The White House had told us and still tells us they don't expect him to be stepping down. But you're right. That statement today about Rod Rosenstein is the one that have everybody's ears suddenly perked up, because Rosenstein is somebody who's been the latest focus for the president. He is overseeing the Mueller investigation right now as the deputy attorney general.
I want to play this because we've gotten a little used to in the last year of Donald Trump saying things like this as president and for the year before as a candidate. But it especially in the crux of a moment like this, it's startling and I think somewhat historic. Here's what it sounded like in the spray.
Does it make you more likely to hire Rosenstein?
You figure that one out.
Okay. So are you going to fire Rod Rosenstein? He looks right directly at the reporter and then says, you figure that one out.
Well, and there was a second question in there, too. She also asked, it was an AP reporter, she also asked, do you still have confidence in Rosenstein? And, you know, it's not clear which question he's responding to. They're different.
I don't think it's a Super Bowl one.
Definitely not the Super Bowl one. We know he's rooting for the Patriots, but that's a separate story. But, you know, I think it certainly raises more questions now about what Rosenstein's future is. One thing that people around here know well, except for Jim Comey, who the president fired. Anybody that has stepped down from big positions, it tends to be a slow roll of forcing you out. The president doesn't necessarily flip the switch to make the firing, despite the years of The Apprentice and that tagline. But this could just be a lot of pressure now on Rod Rosenstein to just make it so terrible that he leaves.
Right. Well, and if Rod Rosenstein leaves, then Rod Rosenstein looks like he did something wrong. Right. I mean, I'm sure that's what his people around him are saying to him.
And the other notable thing is that I think we were hearing from sources that this memo was going to be pretty critical of Rosenstein. There wasn't anything in there that would suggest that. There was really only a passing reference to him being one of several Justice Department officials who signed off on the FISA application to surveil
Karen
Page.
I know you're shocked to hear that a politician may have oversold this before it was actually released.
No,
it does seem there's a little
stop me if you've heard that one before.
The one person, though, McCabe, is certainly front and center in this memo, and that's no surprise. There's that line that seems to be disputed, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, no surveillance warrant would have been granted without this dossier, the DNC partly funded dossier. And you're seeing some Democrats who are in that room push back today.
Yeah.
And then you're seeing Republicans who are in that room say, no, 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 that's exactly what he said. It's kind of critical.
There's
what
going to be
there?
A transcript of this, though,
right.
Whether Andrew McCabe actually said those words. Well,
right.
Will that be released?
You know, I don't know. That's a big question. Republicans, of course, control the committee. You know, the Democrats want their memo out as well. And the White House sort of indicated that, yeah, they'll cooperate, but it's not a guarantee that that would be.
Now, we're going to ask Michael Steele's coming up in just a few minutes to give us his analysis of this as well. And mm-hmm. I will ask both you, Karen, this and also Michael, do you think that the president will declassify the Democratic memo? What are your sources telling you about that?
They're not saying just okay. yet, because they're saying they're not at that point. You know, stay tuned, basically, because they were, behind the timeline that the Republicans were on.
How many days or what would be the soonest that could be released if you go by the timeline that the Nunes memo came out? What are
yeah,
we looking at?
Perhaps next week, mm-hmm. I think yeah. is what the, you know, not anything
Friday.
Imminent today, yeah,
yeah
but perhaps in a week.
It would be next Friday would be the first
yeah.
day available. So we could have Pfizer Friday again.
Pfizer
we
Friday.
We also could have the government shut down at that point
oh,
next week, too,
oh,
if
yes.
you want
reminding
really,
us.
Like, have a great weekend.
Oh,
right?
My gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
All remember
right.
that State of the Union that was only on Tuesday? Just happened. Just Tuesday.
That's amazing.
Not a month
so
ago.
Long ago.
Four days ago.
Oh, my God. You're right. All right. Thank you. At least you know what the good news is.
What's the good news, Ro?
It makes your life seem so much longer covering this. That's the nice part. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Karen Travers, ABC News at the White House. Here is right now Judy Pilak to tell us what's coming up in the bottom of the hour from the WGN Newsroom.
This week on Chicago's Best, Elliot is making a meal that makes you feel right at home. Chicago's Best Comfort Food, Sunday night at 10 on WGN TV.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. Here is Michael Steele, not Christopher Steele, different Steele.
No relation.
Right, no relation.
I get that a lot.
Yeah, I know you do. Michael Steele used to run the Republican Party. Now he just runs his mouth for the NBC.
We love that.
Now, let's talk about this. I just asked this of Karen Travers at the White House for ABC. Do you think, she says, they're not hearing this yet, but if the Democrats have a counter memo that they wish to
yeah.
to release next Friday, do you think that the president will okay that?
Probably not. He probably won't, and he'll say it before because what the Democrats will have to put in there is a lot of stuff that is probably very, very sensitive, and I can see a situation in which the president doesn't want a counter narrative out there.
Yeah.
The problem is that the Speaker of the House has already indicated that he would allow for the Democrats to release a minority report, if you will. And so it's going to be a little bit of back and forth. In the end, the president may succumb with some tweaks to it and say, you know, limit certain information. But we all know that all of that is wholly irrelevant at the end of the day for this reason. This is nothing more than a shell game to create a lot of smoke and a lot of noise that gives the president the cover he thinks he needs to not fire Robert Mueller, because the political damage from that is too great, but rather to take out Rod Rosenstein to put in a person who will effectively shut down the Mueller investigation.
Okay, I want to go to something else, too, I thought about while I was watching this whole thing that I've not heard mentioned here. That obviously Carter Page now has released a statement in which he said that he feels exonerated in all of this, and that he's going to refile legal, his, because obviously he's under investigation, and he's going to have his lawyers file a brief that asks that the judge release him because this was an illegal overhear or an illegal warrant was issued for him now. I guess the question is this. Does this in any way, maybe we're looking at the wrong thing here. Is Carter Page more central to all of our concerns about...
Oh, shut up. I'm not even going to let you finish that statement. No.
Michael
Hell
Steele.
No. Stop it. Stop it.
Well, I'm just wondering if maybe by shutting him down...
Better than that.
By shutting him down. I'm just saying that maybe by shutting the investigation into Carter Page down, it shuts down a big piece of the Mueller investigation.
Bro.
No?
Bro.
All right.
That's the joke. That this is all about Carter Page, who, by the way, was under investigation by the FBI and had other inquiries into his activity going back to 2013 before Donald Trump even thought about running for president.
Right. Mm.
And it wasn't until the Trump campaign brought him in and he started bragging. Remember, he was going on TV bragging about all his connections, running around D.C. bragging about his connections to the Russians.
Yeah.
That's what this is. So this idea that this whole thing hinges on Carter Page is laughable.
All right. I withdraw the question.
And if I'm Carter Page, if I'm his lawyer, I tell him to shut the hell up and sit down. Because you can't go around boasting because Devin Nunes sat there and jerry picked information out of a FISA warrant he never even read and then think you're gonna come back and file some kind of complaint about false information.
I think we've solved this question.
All right, I guess we go to the commercial break now.
I get it. Needed you to,
All right.
But Michael, answer something else though, because I think the one thing that came out, and it's certainly a point of dispute still, is this idea that McCabe was introducing to the FISA court that without the dossier, this partially politically funded dossier, that no surveillance warrant would have been granted, and that you see people, Republicans in the room, who say absolutely he said that. You have Democrats in the room saying no, it's not quite what he said. They're calling for transcripts and that kind of thing. Do you think this thing continues and we're going to keep hearing about this, or do you think it's not a strong enough document that it really goes much farther than this?
Okay, so first off, the idea that that the FISA court warrant was hinged upon the dossier is absolutely false. It is incorrect. And that is part of the lie. That's part of the cherry picking that was put in place by Nunes in the way he approached this whole thing. Number one. Number two, yes, it will go on. I think there will be a real struggle to push out as much of this information so that people can see exactly what went on here. And that's why the contents of the Steele dossier are so important, because in and of themselves, this is what you need to understand. We have the Steele dossier, right? It's available. It's public record. People can read it. And when you realize, when you read it, what you realize is it would have been wholly insufficient in and of itself to meet the court's probable cause standard, period. So there is no way on heaven, earth, or in Nunez's deranged mind that dossier, which, by the way, was first put into motion by Republicans at the Free Beacon who were going after Donald Trump in the primary, then got subsequently picked up and paid for by Hillary Clinton's campaign, that dossier in no way would withstand the kind of scrutiny that a FISA court warrant requires in order for a judge, not one judge, but four judges.
Right. Four different judges.
Thank you.
I got to ask you a question.
So we just need to stop this craziness with this warrant, with this dossier, because it was not the linchpin.
I must assume that former head of the RNC still has some Republican congressmen and senators that he talks to and that he trusts, and they trust him. I'm assuming that.
Right.
And I just wonder, by playing literally the Russian roulette that Republicans are playing here with this, that on the chance that Carter Page does end up to be a bad guy and does end up to be a centerpiece of the attempt of the Russians to get inside the Trump campaign, and the Trump campaign was either too stupid or too complicit to kick guys like him and Papadopoulos or anybody else out that might have done something that they shouldn't have done. I mean, it's one or the other. They may have been just two neophytes, just knew at this, didn't know what they were doing. That's one excuse they may end up having to use, or that they actually cooperated with this. Those Republicans, Devin Nunes, as you just mentioned, one of them, stand at the precipice. They stand over the abyss right now. They're hoping to keep this from going any further. If it does, don't they get swept up? And are the Republicans that you talk to, that you know, that you led, that you still have something to do with, aren't they concerned about this? Or am I out of my mind?
Concerned. No, they're very concerned. But here's the thing that bothers so many of us. Who still hold on to the hope that the party can see the light and get its act together, is that they haven't grown the required pair that's needed in order to do exactly what you've just said. So they are caught in this web that has been very carefully laid, smartly laid. I'll give the president credit. He and his team have created a negative scenario that has been very effective in sort of poisoning the well on the FBI and this Mueller investigation as much as they possibly can. The stopgap has been and should have been, should have been the United States Congress. But when you have the Speaker of the House, when you have committee chairmen, when you have other leaders of the party either giving these sort of pithy non-statements or blithely turning their head, no, I mean, those members who are looking for that kind of leadership, who are looking for cover, quite honestly, they're not getting it. So they sit silently. And the problem is going to be that as this narrative unfolds, my fear, and I've said this now for the past week, my fear is this is going to be one big egg drop soup on the Republican Party that is not going to taste very good going down. It just isn't. And you're already beginning to see it. People are looking at this thing and reading this memo and going, you guys hype this thing for a whole week, and this is it? This is all you... If you want to get a sense of it, just read James Comey's tweet. You know, it really is not playing out the way they thought it was. And in fact, last point on this, the White House, some inside the White House itself was very concerned that this would not play the way the president thought it would play out. And you're going to see that over this course of this weekend and into next weekend as the Democrats ramp up the hype machine around what they want to put out, which is going to be a memo that fills in a whole lot of gaps that this memo leaves out. It gets tougher for the GOP, I think, and it's unfortunate.
All right, thank you, my friend.
We didn't have to be here. We did not have to be here.
No, well, no, we had to actually. All the three
we
of us had to all be here, in our positions. But
well,
we didn't have to be here.
But, yeah,
America didn't have to be here. Is what you're saying? I get
it. Yeah, yeah.
We're happy you're here, Michael.
Yes,
I'm happy to be with you too.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, guys.
Thank
have
you.
Have a good weekend.
Later.
All right, there he goes. Right now, Judy Pilak has got the WGN News brought to you by AppleChevy.com. There you go. Susie Sunshine is here to tell us about the markets as she does every Friday. And I would like to say that this is we haven't had this in a couple of years where you come in and we have to have a little bit of a panic button. I myself am not, I got to tell you something. You know, I'm the first guy to panic about anything.
Yes, you are.
You don't have to agree so quickly. Oh. But I will say this. That the Dow being down a total of 2.5%, 2.54%, keeps going down in the aftermarket.
Oh, no. Stop.
Where they have to adjust. They do that, you know, because the final trades at the end.
Uh-huh.
Down 665 points today, down to 25,520. I am not panicked at all by this because I think it was going too fast. And there are reasons that have nothing to do, by the way, with Donald Trump. If you're expecting this to be about Donald Trump, even though he wants to make it about him, he'll make it about the Democrats before today is over. He'll tweet that. But this has to do with market fundamentals. Does it not? What happened today?
Well, we finally saw a correction in the movement of the market, and that's not unusual. It's just so foreign to us that we are not used. You know, we quickly forget how this feels. But the market doesn't always go straight up. It tends to go in up and down movements. We just haven't seen the downside of this in a while. So yes, the Dow is down, and I will caution. Remember, we want to look at the S&P because it's a broader spectrum and represents a broader range of all the companies in America, not just the Dow. But the S&P also down. But what it's telling us is there was a lot of anticipation and euphoria in the market. We backed off a little bit. We had jobs numbers this morning that were actually very positive. So 200,000 jobs added. That was better than expectations. Average hourly earnings creeping up, positive for the American worker.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right on that point. Average hourly earnings
AHE, yeah,
are up. Now, that is a big, big deal.
Well, they've been up, but they've been up in moderation. So they're up 0.3%. They're about up 2.9% year over year.
And the market doesn't like that, right?
Well, the market likes it as long as employers can manage to handle that cost and manage to keep their operating profits high. And so thus far, we've seen that where wages, the pressure on wages hasn't been so much that it's impacted profits. We're just coming through. We're about halfway through earnings season. So companies are reporting how they're doing. We're not seeing any negative or adverse impact to profitability thus far. So that's all really good. And we're seeing things. Now, the market, obviously, a lot of noise, and it was time for things to perhaps settle down just a bit. Remember, I think I was here just last week talking about what an incredible January it has been. So, yes, we're down, you know, 2.5% today. But up through January 31st, just the first month of January, the market was up over 5%.
Crazy, because you think a lot of people were taking some money off the table, potentially thinking, well, you know, I didn't expect to make this much this quickly.
Exactly. The market was up 5.6% in January. That's a huge number for 1 month.
Yeah.
So to have it, you know, sell off here and have a little bit of a correction come back in and just a slight negative movement, this is down 2%.
And a Friday sell off is a common time to have a sell off because people don't want to hold a position over the weekend.
Exactly. And so we're just seeing a little bit of settling. I don't think this is cause for panic. I think the underlying numbers are still good. People have been watching productivity and what the wage increases are going to do in terms of profitability to companies. Ultimately, that's what matters. But overall, we're hearing reasonable earnings reports and positive commentary from the CEOs, and we still have this tax cut coming that is going to impact numbers going forward. So we still have a lot of positives going on. I would tell people, you know, hold your horses, don't panic. Remember, you're still up, you know, roughly 3% year to date. That's pretty good.
One of the things I saw when I turned on the CNBC this morning was the talk about inflation and the concerns about that. Traders seem, you know, we're speculating, well, will there be 4 rate hikes this year instead of 3 now with the sort of inflationary pressures they see in the marketplace? And talk about how that would impact things and why that might also impact this market.
Well, there's some concern because people want to know what's going to happen with interest rates. Now, inflation means that the Fed is going to feel better about raising interest rates. That's been the plan. It's been well telegraphed that interest rates are coming back up. We also had a momentous occasion in the Fed this week. This was Janet Yellen's last meeting. So she is now stepping down as chairman of the Fed. She's coming off the board, and Jay Powell is becoming chair of the Fed.
Does he wear pearls? Because that's how Roe decides things.
I know, Roe, I don't know how you're going to figure out.
We're going to go back to
the briefcase?
The briefcase. I think it's going to be the knot of his tie.
I think really? Tight, a real tight tie means
double or pressure. Double Windsor or single Windsor or half Windsor or whatever.
And what does it mean?
I will have to see. I don't know yet.
All right. Yeah. All right.
I'll have to observe him over a number of Fed meetings.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So we had a momentous event happen. We kind of passed that by and didn't really talk about it this week. But handing the reins now. It's a continuation of the same in some sense. Jay Powell has been on the Board of Governors already, so he's a known quantity to the street. This was probably the least disruptive transition that could have happened in terms of people who they could have picked to see Janet Yellen. We like Jay Powell quite a bit. The telegraph of increasing interest rates has been ongoing.
Who's we like him?
The street.
The street.
The finance people.
The finance people. Got it.
And, you know, again, street doesn't like surprises. So the fact that he's a known quantity is very nice. And I think that these gradually increasing interest rates have been expected. But, Anna, as you said, when inflation starts to creep in, the market anticipates that interest rates are going to have to come up to put that down. If interest rates go up, that means debt expense goes up. So when companies take out debt to help finance their business, it gets more costly to do so.
So it impacts earnings.
So there's some concern that if this happens too aggressively, it pressures the earnings of companies, and some companies can't handle it.
All right. I'm going to say a word that's going to send chills through the souls of the millennials. Bitcoin. So Bitcoin was down to, it peaked out at $19,000 per.
Almost
$20,000 per Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
And today it dropped down to $7,000.
Yes.
Now that was just, and it was like a week and a half ago that it was $20,000.
Well, the end of the year was the peak for Bitcoin when it was, you know, up near $20,000. It's had a few moves since then.
Yeah, moves.
Dipped down, back up. And I think we talked about Bitcoin being extremely volatile
mm-hmm.
and not really recognized yet. It's not recognized by the SEC as a security. We don't really know what is backstopping it. It's not a currency for any government. There's nothing, no business creating profits or generating cash flow behind it.
You guys are way overthinking this.
Exactly. Right. I knew
this is the problem.
That's it. By the way, I want to ask you a question. Did you ask David Hochberg, as you're working on your mortgage, did you ask David Hochberg if you could pay for the house in Bitcoin?
In Bitcoin?
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd take that.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, yeah.
Do they accept that?
Oh, and millennials. So I'm hoping the millennials are paying attention to this because it is very important. I have several of my friends who have kids in college and they keep saying, talk to my kids. I don't understand. They own Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And their analysts go, well, you know, it'll be fine. All right. Here's an example of how it's not fine. There's a lot of volatility here. We don't know what's going to keep supporting this. Just recognize that when you buy Bitcoin, it's speculative. There's nothing behind it. It's just an idea and a lot of speculation right now. So we're seeing that.
No, there's the blockchain. That's what you always hear from people. No, it's the blockchain.
It's a global
currency. That's behind it. You don't understand it.
Do you think I can return all the bitcoins I bought with my life savings?
They're worth a little less now.
I kept the receipt. You know,
right. Try that, Kevin. See if you can do something with your student debt with that. Yeah. And then when you face the harsh reality of that, come back and we'll talk and see if we can get you sorted out.
I'm worried now.
Well, I think the thing about the Bitcoin that is interesting, too, is that one of the reasons Bitcoin is dropping is that one of the markets in which it is traded turns out was manipulating the Bitcoin prices.
Yes, well,
no!
Imagine.
I am shocked to hear this.
Let's go back to
I thought it was totally legit.
It's not regulated by the SEC. It doesn't trade on it's an exchange. It's not trading on a regulated exchange. It's not trading on a market like we talk about them, the New York Stock Exchange, the London Stock Exchange, the Amex. It's not trading on any of that. This is an exchange that's been created, not regulated. And so you're basically just, it's like PayPal. You're trading back and forth with your peers, but you're trading in an instrument that really is monopoly money right now.
I think the other part about it is just that it's dark web background. The fact that Bitcoin sort of was birthed because of some illegit kind of activities.
Blockchain is the technology that it's based on, and that's meant to represent an open ledger. And that's really what Bitcoin was about.
What were they using it for initially?
Initially, the only thing that would accept Bitcoin as payment was the website Silk Road, which has since been shut down, but was used to predominantly sell illicit or illegal items. That's where you would go to get them. And so that was, you know, sort of the Silk Road, the trafficker's choice. And Bitcoin was the currency because it was untraceable to any mm-hmm. individual, the currency that was used on that. But again, Silk Road has since been shut down. Bitcoin is a complicated process that millennials seem to have embraced in theory, that they like the idea of this, but there's a lot of speculation here. And if you look at that ascent, you know, we talked about it, it's more aggressive than the 2000 tech bubble. We saw the exponential ascent into that. It's far more aggressive of an ascent going into December of 17 than the tulip bulb speculation was centuries ago.
Whoa. Now you're going back 130 years or whatever.
We're making a mistake here.
We're trying to appeal to
the millennials,
to Kevin and Violetta.
Don't do this.
And explain to them. So do not bring up tulips.
Don't even bring up
the good old days of 2013, 14, and 15. We got to stay right now in this moment.
What goes up must come down. And that was a parabolic rise. And now we're seeing a commensurate fall. So it's a lot of volatility.
Parabolic.
That's right. I should probably explain that word more than two.
Yeah, no, they got it.
Yeah,
they got
Google
it.
That.
Yeah.
60% down from its high of 20,000.
Yeah, how about that?
Well, that's just because it was so great when it got started.
Right. It's like was so high that like it was beyond anyone could even think of. So it just kept going and going. But I'm getting a little worried now.
Yeah. Dude.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, look at your Bitcoin today, man.
Big swing and a miss there.
If you bought it at the beginning of 2017, you're still up over where you bought it. The problem is most people found out about it and piled in later in 2017, right around or higher than these prices.
Bunch of posers.
So
yeah, people who started buying it in December. That's when everybody started talking about it.
People started talking about it in the fall, giving it for Christmas gifts and stuff like that. And they started talking about it in the fall, and that's where things really started to get
Christmas
overly
gifts.
Aggressive.
Yeah,
and
oops.
So If you you're starting to feel the pain.
No.
Yeah. People were talking.
It's painful.
I'm on the plane all the time, mm-hmm. traveling to meet companies, going to conferences, and I will tell you that I sat down on the plane this week, and the people next to me that were talking, and you know, you kind of exchange pleasantries, and oh, what do you do? I'm always asking people about what business they're in and how things are going, and they asked me what I did, and I talked about finance. The first thing that came up was, oh, you know, I've got Bitcoin. What do you think about that? That is another sign that this is a problem.
Everybody's got it, yeah.
Right, he's like, well,
so
I
then
just
this guy
I'd have
for the next 2 hours was freaking out.
Well,
tell me what
you
I
know,
need to do.
You know what? I hope he's listening because I think it was just a couple of days ago that I said you really should be careful because uh-huh. it could move down at any time.
Bitcoin had a good run,
and so exactly, really,
yeah. Well, I want and the thing that I'm most worried about are the Winklevoss twins.
I know they're not billionaires anymore.
Yeah, the Winklevi. What's going to happen to them?
I know. Well, I still think they really accumulated their Bitcoin when it was like $1,
yeah,
a coin. So
right.
I think they're doing fine.
And
but they might have knocked a billion. You know, they're yeah. not, maybe not at that billion level. It might
right.
just be tens of millions now.
Yeah.
And whoever the guy is who's you know started this whole thing that still is some sort of
still remains anonymous
figure. The people think they know who he is. He's a guy from Taipei, or he's a guy from Hong Kong.
Well, the lore is yes, he's yes. a mystery programmer from yeah. somewhere in Asia.
I think it's Steve Bannon.
Oh, gee.
Oh, boy.
You're going to put that on him, too? He's got enough to worry about. He's busy.
All right. Thank you very much, Susie
My
Sunshine.
Pleasure.
Appreciate it. We got that all figured out. So you think that, don't panic. This is a needed retreat in the market.
Bro, I'm amazed that you're actually this calm about it.
I
and
know,
that we don't
too.
Hear that high-pitched tone in your voice that we usually do
exactly.
in these situations.
I'm too worried about the memo right now. That's what Judy's working
about.
On, the WGN newsroom. What's coming up at the top of the hour, Judy? It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis
yes.
right here on 720 WGN. All right. Coming up on the program, Tom mm-hmm. Skilling will tell us about the winter that is upon us now.
6 more weeks. According to the
Groundhog. Okay.
We won't bring that up because
right,
Tom
no.
doesn't want to hear about
no, no,
that.
No, no, no,
no.
I got to bring it up. I
got
to bring it up with Tom because I read the article about it today and I cannot believe how absolutely suckered we have all been by this stupid rodent. In Pennsylvania, it turns out that the whole that Groundhog Day
yeah.
was about shooting the thing in the head and eating it.
Oh, you eat the groundhog?
Yes.
Can't taste
I'll
good.
Tell you about it. I'll tell Tom about
Again,
it. Again, Tom will cry.
Eating another pet.
Oh, by the way, our yeah. audition for the pet is off. Turns
oh,
out the tortoise can't deal with the cold.
What? Don't tell the kids that. I thought we were
yeah.
going to break it a little bit easier.
Yeah. There was like the way the tortoise had to get here, they risked the tortoise getting hypothermic. Apparently, tortoises don't regulate their body temperature very well.
It would be hard to walk on the street with the heat lamp, wouldn't it?
If right. you guys don't want to get us a pet, just say so. You
yeah.
don't have to make excuses.
The
make
tortoise went
up.
To a farm. We sent the tortoise to a farm.
But don't worry, we'll still look for other pets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's like when you say, we'll
Smaller.
See, right? Is that what that's all about?
We'll
thing.
See
yeah.
means yes.
Yes, we'll see means not a chance.
Maybe means no, for sure.
This is Chicago's very own. 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com, Amazon Echo users just say, play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Judy Pilak has the news. It's 4 o'clock. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here, 720 WGN. A little Prince playing here.
Nice.
We have a very deep catalog of Prince.
We do.
All 26,000 songs that he released.
Did you know there's a Prince pop-up kind of event over at the Mall of America for this during the Super Bowl?
At SBLEE?
At the LEE.
Yeah.
52.
I never understood, Tom Skilling, why they have to keep the Roman numerals up after they got to 10. I thought, this is stupid.
I know.
Now we go to 11, right?
The X was kind of cool. But
I know.
The L, not as much.
Yeah.
Certainly encourages us all to continue to remember how to read the Roman numerals, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It does. But, you know, now and you see the LEE, and you're like, oh, that's an L. Why is there an L? You have to go, oh, they have another, that's for 50. You got to have something for 50.
I know.
Yeah.
It's one of those things you learn in school and you tend to forget for lack of use, you know,
mm-hmm.
except until the Super Bowl comes along. And then
right.
it kind of reinvigorates your memory about how the whole system works.
I'm sure the kids on social media are using it for something. I don't know. That's it's a way that instead of now that Bitcoin is falling apart, they'll be trading in Roman numerals.
I know. Hey, how about that stock market drop today?
Woo! Wow. I know.
Holy
what a
smokes.
Ride.
I haven't seen that in a while.
No, yeah. that's mm-hmm. very true. Well, I guess we'll all have to work several more years, huh?
Although our analyst said, Susie Sunshine, who's our analyst,
yes.
She pointed out that you have to go all the way back to January 16th to see numbers like this.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's okay. I mean, we only lost a couple weeks' worth of gains.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of talk that maybe it was overvalued, the market was. So
there might have been some talk of that, yes.
Well, it's certainly done nothing but go up. So you can't look at something like this and panic.
And the way things happen today in this computer age, they're able to react to these trades so fast that, heck, we may be up 600 points on Monday. You know, the way
I think you're still going to see the market continue to listen. Markets can continue to grow as long if you have to be. If your whole job is to be in and out every day,
yes,
it affects you. But that's not your whole job. You're not doing
no.
that. You just sit around, watch it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down, and it's been trending up since. I mean, you got to remember this goes back to the Will Ferrell bit last week on Saturday Night Live. Uh-huh. I mean, you got to remember it was 8,000. It was 8,000.
Isn't that amazing?
Not all that long ago. Yeah.
Right? In 2007.
It's incredible.
So, I mean, it's like, it's okay.
Yeah.
And we've seen it 28,000. So.
Well, they always say, you know, just kind of, you know, take it in stride as much as you can and, you know, stay with it. Don't panic and get out fast because you can lose because it may bounce back again.
Hey, you know what? A boss once told me this, and this
mm-hmm.
is true.
Mm-hmm.
Son. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. And that's when I was asking for a raise of 3%. I remember that.
Was that here in Chicago?
Yeah, that was here in Chicago.
I see.
Yeah.
He thought you were being hoggy?
Yes. Pigs, I was like, I just need 3%.
Did you get the raise? Gave,
no. This is back, and it was, and I thought to myself, what is so hoggy about 3%?
Mm-hmm.
It seems
hoggy.
Kind of piglitty, even piggy, piglitty.
Yeah, that
letty, mm-hmm. piglet.
Very true.
Yes. All right. Hey. Okay. A couple things here.
Yes.
I got to talk to you about this Groundhog Day because I read this story about Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm.
That it turns out that the whole groundhog thing was really not about the whether the thing was actually telling us whether it was
projecting
winter or
the
not.
Weather.
Right.
Because
it turns out that this groundhog, which is a gigantic, like, you know, overly fat rat.
Mm-hmm. It bit one of the reporters today. It was trying to corral it.
Yeah.
And it's like, didn't like that.
Yeah.
See, if you deal with us human, we tend not to bite people.
I don't know. I've met some. Anyway, the point is that this thing that originally in Western Pennsylvania or wherever this Punxsutawney thing happens, mm-hmm. Central Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. this was all about a festival that they were having in the late 1800s in which they were going and hunting these things because they fatten up for the winter because they hibernate.
Mm-hmm.
This is an animal that hibernates.
Makes sense.
Which started a whole other conversation in my head about what happens to the bears at the zoo. Why are they not hibernating? But that's a separate issue.
And why aren't we using them as a gauge of the weather to come? You
exactly.
know? Yeah.
So the thing is that they would, and they were talking about all the different stuff they would make out of the
groundhog
these things.
Meat?
The groundhog meat apparently is somewhere between pork and chicken.
I don't want to try it.
Gee.
Kevin would.
Bon
sure.
appetit.
Groundhog burgers.
Yeah.
Yep. It's good eating.
It's slow cook it.
Yep. Not as good as possum, I'll tell you that, but it's good eating.
How many meats are described as tasting like chicken?
Yeah. You know? Everything you can't figure out.
Rattlesnake meat tastes like chicken, you know, and just alligator meat.
Gator does taste almost like chicken. I've had gator before.
I've heard that. I've never sampled it before, but
I have. You got to get through this. It's weird. It's strangely. It's not
gator.
It's, yeah, gator's it's got a little different density to it.
Fatty.
Yeah, it's
fatty.
It's fatty. I've had it.
Why
fried.
Is it so fatty?
I don't know. You wouldn't think that with
it's
a gator.
It's like jelly.
Yeah, yeah. That's the texture part of it.
That's so great.
Is it crunchy? Does it taste good?
No. Well, it depends on how you prepare it. Yeah.
Kevin made me eat gator at the Chicago.
Oh, yeah, when we did the video.
Chicago.
Violetta, not a fan. It was gator sausages. I thought they were pretty good. I finished them.
Gator sausages. Wow, that's good. Where was that? At the Taste?
Yeah, Taste.
Yeah, that's where we ran into you, a cutout version of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Took a picture with you.
That was my NASCAR name for years, Gator Sausages.
Gator Sausages.
The I have a thing though about the idea of like greasy meat. I mean, imagine the groundhog is a very greasy thing. Anyway, so they went on. They went and hunted these things, mm-hmm. and then one year they were like, well, you know, they turned it into this kind of, well, I wonder, you know, it's going to come out and see its shadow, which has nothing to do with anything because it hibernates.
Wow.
Right? It's not like it wouldn't see a shadow or not. It would come out and go, oh, it's 80 degrees. I overslept.
They're forcing it out of its little pen.
Yeah.
Well, now the truth can be told. Do you know all these years I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. And the damnedest thing is that you know, we sit around every February 2nd and mm-hmm. pretend that this means something,
yes.
Which, of course, it means absolutely nothing.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a rat forecasting the weather? Come on. You know, and most animals are only reacting to whatever's happened up to that point. So to the extent whatever's happened up to that point continues, then it's predictive. But
Tom, are you a little bit jealous of the groundhog?
No.
Oh.
I honestly am not. I have no desire to...
To be a groundhog?
To be one, to see one. No.
To be made in any kind of sausage? I have no desire for any of that.
You know, I get a kick out of the whole thing. It's kind of like the Farmer's Almanac, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a fun read, and it's interesting to look at. So I have some fun with it.
It is good television when the groundhog tries to take a piece out of a reporter's head.
I was going to say, especially when it bites a reporter.
Have you ever had to be part of a groundhog kind of ceremony in your weather career? Do they ever force you to do that?
No, I've never done that, Anna, which is interesting.
No, yeah. It's not interesting. It's actually a great testament to the scientific and the great import of Tom Skilling that even the most callow of news directors would not say to Tom Skilling, you know, Tom, here's what we're going to do.
I'm so surprised by that, actually.
Right. Yeah.
We need you to go to Woodstock and go talk to the groundhog that was in the groundhog movie. Don't worry about it.
It drives me to distraction, though, the way there are serious headlines whenever the Farmer's Almanac forecast comes out or the groundhog is there. I mean, you know, winter is going to continue another 6 months, and why is that even headlined? I don't know. It's a curiosity. It ought to be a tease at the end of the newscast, I think.
Well, that's, yeah, that's the water skiing squirrel right there.
Yeah.
They're not even really cute animals.
No.
They're kind of... Yeah, I don't know. They
seem like they're kind of mean.
Yes, that's the thing.
Well,
they're grumpy. You're waking them up out of their den.
Well, that's true.
As I pointed out, yes, they are grumpy. As I pointed out, I did have one hiss at me. when unlike Tom Skilling, I don't have the kind of career where people respect all of my experience and wisdom. So they send me out to talk to a groundhog from time to time.
You had to do the live interview with the groundhog?
I had to do a live interview with a groundhog.
Mm. Wow.
And
when did that happen?
That's a couple years ago on Windy City.
Oh.
And
that would be fun. You would handle that well.
I swear to God, I think the thing was going to like scratch my eyes out.
Really?
It was like they got to hold the groundhog back. I have that effect. Dogs tend to love me. Even like mean dogs tend to love me. Cats hate me.
Huh.
Wow.
And I don't know what that's about. And I think, and apparently groundhogs do too.
Well, you know, Ro, I remember there was a clip of this female reporter was out doing a live shot at the top of the newscast, and she was out at an animal, clinic, and they took in stray animals and all, and so they were pitching adopting these animals, and she's holding this cat, and any cat owner would know that that cat was about ready to go into attack mode, you know, because it was there going... Oh, you could hear this in the background. And you thought that is not good, and sure enough,
oh no!
As she's going on, it goes rawr, and it reaches up and grabs her hair, and it was really kind of frightening to watch.
Yeah,
but she was okay. But I suppose it's better than holding a tiger and having it do that to you. But
I suppose, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, just ask Siegfried or Roy. I'm not sure. I can't remember which one it was.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that's right. Was it Siegfried or Roy?
It was Roy, I think. It was Roy Horn. Right? I can't remember.
Did they ever go back to that line of work again? Or
They were.
Seriously injured, right?
Yeah. Well, he had a... Yeah, I don't think he's ever gone back to that line of work. I think the other one, but they kept
Roy.
Those,
Roy was the one who was Roy was 10 the years one, ago.
Right? Mm-hmm. Who was? Oh, that's only 10 years ago. Wow. He that was the one that was hurt. And Siegfried, I think they continued to keep 15. The animals, and the animals were on display. I think at the Mirage Hotel in Las Vegas. So I think the MGM people that own Mirage, I think they kept them around as kind of a, I think they had like a 100-year contract with them or something. So there was nothing you could do.
Yeah.
And then there was this argument. There's a lot of people who are arguing that the tiger was just trying to help Roy, that Roy actually had a stroke and the tiger was picking him up by the neck and trying to drag him off the stage. And that's when he pierced his skin because a tiger can carry a cub like that, but you can't carry a human like that because the skin's different, blah, 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 so blah. There's a lot of different argumentation around the whole thing. All I know for certain is that I would never do that job.
No.
The only thing I know.
Well, you're not even good with little cats. Why would you get in the ring?
No, and it's the funny thing is that the Mirage built an entire enclosure for them on the Mirage property, and then these guys had their own ranch, essentially, like, you know, yes. Tiger Ranch, that was a couple miles off the strip. That, or you know, maybe even a little bit further than that. They had this big, you know, house, and they kept the tigers there, and they could, and they, that's they raised them, you know, and they bottle fed them from babies, so they would trust them and all that. And it's mm-hmm. and Montecore, which was the name of the tiger that attacked Roy Horn, mm-hmm. You know, was one of those. You know, yeah. It was bottle raised, and they thought they were, you know, never going to have a problem with
sure.
Him. I'm like, hey, I don't. Right, think
so. Being taken to the hospital, he was saying, make sure nothing happens to Montecore. He didn't want this cat to be blamed.
Right.
And yet it took them several years.
Did they ever conclude it was really something other than what you say, Ro, that it was some sort of natural instinct on the part of the animal?
It's very hard to get a sworn statement from the tiger. So I don't know.
You can review the tape, though, and make a decision.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the thing is in slow motion, it all looks great. Like when you, because they all showed in slow motion the tiger like you know, going to grab it, but in real time it looks like he's attacking him. So I don't know. What are you going to do?
I know.
This is not. I don't know. How did we end up here? We have real weather heading our way, Tom. Shovelable snow. I don't like those words together.
You know, it's interesting. We're getting into more frequent snows, and we're thinking some flurries will go through tonight. That's the beginning of some warm air that'll actually send the temperatures rising. Tomorrow we break above freezing, and the day tomorrow will be no big deal. There'll not be much precipitation at all till maybe some flurries later in the day. Might even be a sprinkle mixed in the early part, and that continues tomorrow evening. But it's toward morning Sunday that we get periods of snow to come in, and the same thing on Sunday. It'll be off and on again, and there could be some lake moisture with it. And the varying forecasts have gone anywhere from an inch to several inches on this. This is not the storm of the century. It's not like the Groundhog's Day blizzard, the 7th anniversary of which we're marking now. Remember that thing with Lakeshore Drive shut down and 70-mile-an-hour winds?
How can you forget?
Terrible. But we're getting some great pictures from folks about what that looked like. But it'll be nothing like that. Then there's another little light snow Monday night and a system lifting out of the southern plains. And that puts us under the north edge of its snow shield late Tuesday night, maybe into Wednesday morning. Now that thing, if it were to really rev up, could do something interesting. So that's one to watch. But it we're close enough to the cusp of its precipitation that there are a lot of questions about that at this point.
That was what year was that blizzard?
2011,
wow.
Yeah, okay. Third biggest snowstorm in Chicago history. 21.2 inches of snow. And thunder and lightning. Remember that was where Jim Cantore was out for the Weather Channel's Lightning Was Arcing. And Art Tom Negevin was out there on Lakeshore Drive.
Yes.
You know, that lightning in snowstorms is dangerous. That's that high amperage, we call it positively charged lightning. If that decides to strike somebody, that's the kind that really can do some harm,
Okay. Why don't you bring that up now?
I know.
I feel so good about thunder snow.
We can bring it up because that's right, Anna. That's the point. And, you know,
we survived that.
So. Hey, you know what else is interesting?
You know who didn't survive it, by the way? The doorman on Lakeshore Drive that had to turn away all the people who had to pee.
Oh, gosh.
Remember that? There were, like, people were crawling across Lakeshore Drive and going into the apartment buildings there.
Poor devils.
And asking, and they're like, can I use a bathroom?
I think I was one of those people.
First of all, getting the door open, and you know, when you're in a 5-foot drift in a car that is stuck behind a jackknifed CTA articulated bus, that had to be life at its lowest ebb, especially since you were probably trying to do it at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
Because people were stuck there till 4 in the morning.
Yeah, but hours and hours.
One note, though. This pattern later this month, you know how we've jumped back and forth from Arctic air to Pacific air? We've been talking about that. There's a much above normal temperature pattern that seems to be setting up for the back half of this month. And it could even, we could start feeling it toward mid-month. So there's a big turnaround coming later in the month, and we might have a real February thaw there if this works out.
That sounds good. February thaw.
Now, you're seeing that, or is that a historical thing?
No, we're seeing it. In fact, we get model runs out to 45 days these days, and they'll look at increments of 5 days at a time and the temperature departure during that period. And we go above normal the back half of the month and even into early March, according to these forecasts.
Yeah, because I remember a couple times on the long four-day weekend, the President's Day weekend in high school. I remember one or two times that even when we had bad winters, every once in a while you get like a crazy day.
Yeah.
In February. You get like one day that would like pop into the 50s or 60s.
Well, you know, there have been studies that show this is becoming more common as the climate warms. We're getting these thaws.
How dare you?
And so that, you know, that's been more and more a feature of the many late winter periods.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's interesting. Well, we'll see. All right, Tom, I like the way you're talking right now.
Well, I
like the way
you're thinking. We'd end on a positive note. The end of the week and a positive note here.
Right. All right, very good. Tom Skilling right there. You can see him tonight on the WGN-TV News starting at 5 o'clock.
I haven't checked with the groundhog on that, but didn't he say it was going to be...
I'd like to see you lose your crap. This is what I'd like to see Tom
do. That
would
be a great...
You know, Tom has had a very sort of the alpha and omega of emotions this year on television. I'd like to see you like rush in the middle of a groundhog story and sit down and
you
just start.
You gotta be kidding!
Right,
you're putting
shut
some
it down
out there to tell me what my weather's gonna
here.
Be.
Look at these computers!
Yes.
It's $1 million worth of software in these computers.
And you put a stupid rodent out there in front of me. I know.
Versus a scientist. It doesn't make any sense.
I know.
Yeah, there
well,
you go.
We saw you in that Godfather video, so we know. We know it's in there somewhere.
That's it.
Tom.
Yeah,
all
it's
right.
Buried not too deep, Anna. Not
we
too
love
deeply.
That.
Yeah, so be careful. Tread carefully here.
I know.
It's a very volatile situation.
We understand.
Yes.
All right, thank you, Tom.
See you guys.
Have a good weekend.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, too. Judy's going to tell us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN Newsroom. Concho with Anna DeBlasis right here, 720 WGN. Hey, a little change in programming today. I should mention this so I don't freak people out.
Mm-hmm. We still have the Knarble Wagon, right?
Oh, yes. Thank you. The Knarble Wagon is 21 years old this year. That makes it old enough to drink itself, which I think is pretty interesting.
Sounds dangerous.
But the Knarble Wagon, for the first time in 21 years, is moving down the block a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It is to a nicer home at 530.
Oh.
Okay. It's going to be now. The Knarble Wagon is not going to be rolled right at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. It's going to be rolled after the 5:30 news.
So we have to wait even longer now?
Well, there's a really good reason for it. Because what had happened was we were rolling out the Knarble Wagon, and then we still had serious content in the top 5 at 5, mm-hmm. or somewhat serious content. And
the sound of ice in a
yes. Was, while you're discussing Death and Mayhem,
right?
Just decided in the top 5 at 5 that the people seem to really love the top 5 at 5. So what we decided to do is make, as the Knarble Wagon always was designed to be, a break in the
kind of a wind down
after
at the
crazy
end.
Yeah,
right. And so that's where you get into Rubber Reviews and you got the Knarble Wagon, then you got movies and you got music and you got all the rest of the stuff that happens on the show.
Okay,
to take you into
I must have missed a memo on that.
Yeah.
It just got released today, actually.
It is FISA Friday.
It's
FISA Friday.
Are there other memos we need to know about?
Yeah
no, that's
else?
It that was the only memo. That's
no
that's,
turtle
that
later liquor.
They're getting that memo, by the way, is getting more traction right now than the Republican memo that came out of the House. Hey,
well, it's because it's easy to understand, first of all.
Pat Brady is joining us now. Pat used to run the Illinois Republican Party, also was a former assistant U.S. attorney for the Department of Justice, and therefore has a few thoughts on this as well. All right. Now, remember, Republicans were telling us, the ones from the House committee and then some other House Republicans were telling us, hey, this is going to be huge. It's going to make jaws drop. It's going to make everything happen here that's going to change the entire world. It didn't seem to really have that effect.
No.
Hold on a second here. What the hell? Oh, hold on a second, Pat. All right. Somebody messed with me.
I was trying to signal you that my...
I saw that. I'm like, what are you doing?
Your butt was...
I wasn't strapped in.
Yes. No, sorry, I took off.
It's time to take off, and he was not ready.
Mr. Rowe, don't push the button.
His seat was fully reclined. All right. Anyway, so it wasn't as groundbreaking. It was what had already sort of been leaked, that this really surrounds Carter Page and whether or not the use of that, what is now being deemed solely as a political investigation into, you know, of Michael's, of not the other Steele,
Chris Steele,
of Christopher Steele, that a politically motivated memo was used to try to get the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, to continue to monitor him based on something political as opposed to something that was legal. That is, based on what I have seen, that's even a stretch.
It's a huge stretch. And I'll just give you my experience from doing search warrants in federal court. And these FISA courts are, I believe, appointed by the Supreme Court. They're the top-end federal judges in a very secretive court. This thing's been around since 77. But when you file for a FISA over here, or wherever you want to call it, pen register, whatever, but you're trying to get a warrant, you may have to make a finding of probable cause, and the application that goes with it is probably 70 pages long, and it's absolutely ridiculous to make the statement in any way, shape, or form that a judge at that level, prosecutors at that level, under potential criminal penalties if they screw around with this, would somehow use one dossier or rely solely on that dossier, that being the but-for whether or not the judge is going to grant the warrant. It makes no sense at all. It might have been in there. I used to get cases. I did white collar and public corruption. I used to get cases out of the paper sometimes, but particularly financial crimes. I'd grab the article, I'd go interview whoever wrote it, and then I would corroborate that through however I witnessed
it. That'd be just one of the pieces of evidence.
One of the pieces. Yeah, here's the article. I could put that in the application. The story was broken.
You wouldn't beast the whole thing up.
No, it seems unlikely for 70 pages. But if it really were sourced by, you know, this dossier, the political backing and the Clinton, you know, ties to it, that should have been revealed, you would think. And why would it be in there at all? I think that would be another question about this.
Well, the law is, at least in the grand jury, and I think the same applies to the FISA courts, the prosecutor's not under an obligation to present every piece of exculpatory evidence that might mitigate in favor of the person that's the target of the warrant. You just put the evidence forward. In this case, and there's Supreme Court law on this, everybody's got a bias or a prejudice. Every witness, I used to joke at 26th Street back in the old days that it just depends on whose witnesses are better liars and have these cases.
Gosh.
That's who wins. But the reality is
I feel so much better about the criminal justice system.
What a justice system.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Well, I'm kind of not kidding. But the reality is the legal obligation is to present the evidence. They don't have to put in every piece of exculpatory evidence. And I think the standard now, it has to be significantly exculpatory, which a bias like this may or may not be. I don't even think it's that close a call. But again, they're not just relying on that particular memo. But what Nunes did, cherry pick one sentence on McCabe and say we relied on this. I could see a million different contexts for that statement where it's not nearly what they're trying to make it, and try to make this into a witch hunt. And right now, 38% of the country believes this is a witch hunt.
Well, 38% of the country would believe that Donald Trump has just invaded Mars and it's okay. I mean, whatever he says goes. And they believe him. And I think for a lot of reasons. I don't want to, I'm not, that sounds judgmental, a statement as it came out as. But it is true that 38% of the country thinks that Donald Trump is the right guy at the right time. They want to see things blown up. They want to see things changed. They don't trust Democrats. They don't trust they didn't trust Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or anything like that. And so they want something totally, totally, totally different. They want a business guy. They don't want a politician. They want a guy who tells it like it is. They want a guy who hates the same people they hate. You know, it's like, you know, whatever it happens to be, whatever drives that motivation. So it doesn't really matter. You have to kind of almost put that whole idea that he's got this base and that base is going to be there forever aside, because that base is not going to be there forever. Because when Devin Nunes decides he wants to run for president of the United States and he's going to call everybody some funky nickname, it's not going to work out for him. right? And this is the question I had for Michael Steele, and this is the question I have for you.
Which there's so many Michael Steele.
This is the Michael Steele, the guy who used to run the RNC. I think Michael. You're familiar with
him. Yeah, Michael's a good guy.
Yeah. What now, are Republicans at risk here, do you think, by standing on the cliff here with Donald Trump? And this clearly, Devin Nunes and this memo specifically are designed to create political cover. There isn't any question about that. That is a statement of fact. Would you agree with that?
100%.
Okay. And you're a Republican.
Yeah.
So
that memo, I could have written it on the train on the way in.
Right.
I couldn't believe how lack of substance. It was just, just write it down.
So if it turns out that Carter Page is a bad guy and they do, and Comey ends up, or I'm sorry, Mueller ends up indicting him, or somebody else does, or that, you know, that there is more fire to the smoke around that meeting at Trump Tower, you know, any of these things. If all of a sudden the Russian thing does get a little bit tighter, do guys like Devin Nunes and the other Republicans, this kid from New York, Florida, Matt Gaetz or whatever his name is, these guys are really going over the top for Donald Trump. What happens to them in their political careers? What happens to the Republican Party?
Well, I guess there's two ways to look at it. You got to look at the primary races. This is going to ensure they get elected. I mean, the maps are so gerrymandered. There's no real swing districts anymore, very few. So it doesn't hurt them at all politically. But do I think it hurts the party? Yeah, because I think in the long run, it hurts the country. And I guess that's a long answer to a short question, but I certainly think it
How does
hurts.
It hurt the country, do you think? What do you
look at the damage that has been done in the last 6 weeks to the institutions of government, like the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the CIA, and this putting this memo out on these people. They're all good public servants. That kind of damage. To me, too, there's a distraction now. We're focusing on all this nonsense every day with Trump, and every time in my lifetime when the country starts focusing on something besides what we should be focusing on, something bad happens. We had the impeachment in the 90s. Bill Clinton took his eye off the ball, and that's when Osama bin Laden was building terrorist camps in Central Africa and in Afghanistan. So I think we won't know what the effects are right now, but long term, I think they're bad. Plus, these institutions of government, whether it's the media, law enforcement, or the judiciary, I don't think the president has a fundamental understanding of how important they are.
I want to read a little bit of the letter that Chris Wray sent to Chris Wray is now the head of the FBI, and he sent to his
a Republican,
a Republican
appointed by the president
to the men and women of the
Bob
FBI.
Mueller, a Republican,
Rod Rosenstein,
a Republican,
right? I mean, it's the American people read the papers and they hear lots of talk on cable TV and social media, but they see and experience the actual work you do, keeping communities safe and our nation secure, often dealing with sensitive matters and making decisions under difficult circumstances. And that work will always matter more. Talk is cheap. The work you do is what will endure.
That was addressed to
the members of the
agents
FBI.
Of the FBI, yeah. the workers of the FBI.
Okay, so how'd you like to be a line agent down in Dothan, Georgia, or Alabama, or whatever it is, delivering a subpoena on a meth case down there?
Mm.
And what do you think he's thinking, that the people down there that are think he's some part of this black hole conspiracy that is out to get Donald Trump? I mean, the damage it does to the line agents and the FBI. And I'm glad to hear that the head of the FBI put that statement out, because that's exactly right.
So I ask you to keep doing your great work and keep being the great people you are. And I know that I consider it an incredible privilege to work beside you, and that I'm determined to defend your integrity and professionalism every day. Remember, keep calm and tackle hard.
Remember, these guys do counterintelligence, too. It's not like the old days when I was there and they didn't do it. Since 9/11, this agency's changed a lot, and they are our first line of defense against the guys coming across.
Domestically, yeah.
Domestically.
Well, you saw McCain say we're doing Putin's job for him. I think there are a lot of deep concerns about undermining the entire agency. But I guess my question to you would be, what would be the appropriate way to deal with this? If you see these text messages and you're within the FBI, and would you do anything about that? Or was
you mean
that
between
not
the two agents?
The two agents who were kind of saying, hey, we had this meeting in Andy's office and we want to,
you know, those stupid affairs have brought down
oh, my gosh. How about it? But I mean, I think that when people see that, I think there is a little bit of concern and they wonder. There's no reason to smear an entire agency or the entire FBI or the Justice Department. But they look at that and they say, well, there is some concern about how this was handled.
And there's a proper oversight role that the Congress has. But in the context of a FISA warrant or a regular warrant, the proper oversight is with the judge in the district. If you have a problem with a subpoena or over here or pen register or whatever, you file something with the chief judge and you go have a big argument about it. But it's within the court system and that's where it belongs. If where is Carter Page's attorney? If they really thought this thing was so wrong, where's his attorney filing some kind of motion?
I just think that guys like you, you went into the political world after you left the government, you know, the government side. And, you know, we're one of the people that was, you know, organizing Republicans in the state of Illinois, for example. And I think that the guys in your opposite numbers in the Democratic Party have done a really, really good job, especially given the fact that now the media is so split up into, you know, short to thinner lanes, if you will, of impact. So that there are people, you can find something, no matter who you are and what you believe in, you can find some form of media that will agree with you, that will reinforce your thoughts, right? So in a world in which people try to create messaging, as you did for Republicans, or as, you know, Axelrod did for Democrats,
He had a little more success than I did.
He might have, for the record, just a touch more. But I walked
by the White House once.
But the point is this:
better than me.
That he's got. You know, there's a whole thing that goes on with trying to create this the messaging, and it's been very, very, very effective. And the president is perhaps one of the great. One of the great tacticians of this, because he is not afraid to go past where everybody else has gone. Because I think there was always something that Republicans, polite Republicans and Democrats, always had. It was like, all right, well, don't take the markets, for example, and take credit for the markets, and then blame the markets on somebody else. Right. Like a day to day on the Dow. Right. You could say overall the economy, but like the markets day to day. That was a very simple mechanic. That's done.
He took credit for no crashes in aviation for 20 years or 10 years.
Correct. He took credit for a lot of things that he doesn't that he wouldn't necessarily take credit. And he lays blame for things that are not really assignable. So he's gone to a place that no one ever thought at the highest level of government anybody would ever go to. Is this genie out of the bottle? Will they ever be able to stuff that back in? If he does, if he's successful and he has a good first term and let's say another second term and the place doesn't fall apart, is this the new normal of politics?
I don't think so, because I do believe in these elections typically are you elect somebody that's almost opposite of who was there before. With George Bush,
which just seems to be the issue.
Yeah, you get. Kind of a more intellectual, you get Barack Obama. It always swings back. So to answer your question, I don't think this is permanent. I think it's a permanent change just because of social media, but there was a permanent change when Ronald Reagan came in, and there's a permanent change when JFK came in. Even Franklin Roosevelt, there's always a change in how you communicate.
Right, it's reflected through the modes of communication.
Modes of communication, but this guy has taken it to a different level where it's not country first, it's him first.
Yeah.
And this is the first time in my lifetime where I truly believe... it's not country first.
Okay. Spoken like a true Republican who is speaking only to his friends and not to the public. Not actually speaking into a microphone, because there's so many Republicans who are running and hiding behind all this right now in Washington, and that scares me.
And I want to congratulate you. This is the longest I've ever gone on the show, and you did not point out that I told you that Donald Trump could never win, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I think it's a good
thank you.
Time.
Thank you for falling on your own sword. Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour in the WGN newsroom? Carnival Wagon open is. Carnival Wagon will open.
Yes. Just a little delay today.
30 sure minutes from now.
Good question, Violetta. Did you privately open it to sample it?
I did not. Did not.
Just share.
I am. We're just pushing back by half an hour out of respect for the top five at five. Which has its own kind of thing. Sometimes it feels better to be drinking during the top five at five,
depending on the subject matter,
right? Because it makes you feel a little like you feel like you've got a chance to maybe
like
survive this
it.
Thing, or like you it's like I don't care if we all die.
Right, self medicating.
Yeah,
in some ways.
Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly what it is.
To get through it.
But that's kind of the Carnival Wagon's coming your way henceforth at 5:40.
Can't wait.
This is definitely more responsible.
I think this
it's a grown-up move here.
We're kind of known for that on this show, aren't we?
This is what the conversation was like with the executives here at WGN, which was because the Canarbo Wagon is 21 years old. It is 21 years that we've been doing the Canarbo Wagon on radio here in Chicago, and that's a pretty good thing. And it's got its traditions. The Canarbo Wagon has run regardless of things that, you know, with the exception of the week of September 11th is the only time the Canarbo Wagon, you know, did not run.
Makes sense.
And that did make sense. And that seemed like a responsible and reasonable thing to
do at
that time, too.
So there were responsible moments in the history of the Canarbo Wagon.
So they made that point to me, which was, you know, maybe you get all the business done of the week and then you do the Canarbo Wagon the way that people normally do these things.
Well, we'll see how this works.
It's bad enough that you're drinking on the air.
No.
Sort of the way.
I feel like you took exactly what they were saying to you in a very calm fashion, and you're repeating it back to us now. So it's very comforting.
Yes.
Yes. If I remember the first time I filled in on the Friday with you at the other place for the Canarbo Wagon, and I didn't believe that you actually did drink on the air. And then I was like, wait a minute, are you allowed to do this? And you are.
Well,
maybe.
See, there was as we like to say now in the modern era, it's a gray area.
Oh, okay.
It's a gray area.
They're alternative facts.
Yes. There's an alternative fact that says, yes, it's totally fine.
I'm going to roll with that from now on. Yeah, it's a gray area.
It's a gray area.
Sort of,
you know,
gray.
Listen, but, officer, it's a gray area.
You know, the courts haven't decided this point yet.
That's right.
It hasn't gone to the Supreme Court.
It has not gone to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has not weighed in on this. As a matter of fact, they refused the last time it came up.
I haven't seen a memo about this.
Right. In United States versus Roe, and then there was United States versus Canarbo. It was bad. It was, the whole thing was bad. All right, here we go.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, I'll do that. Checking in at
number five.
The controversial Nunez memo has been released by House Republicans with the approval and at the urging, it appears, of President Trump. Now, the memo, as it's being known, in which Democrats say the FBI say the document, the Democrats and the FBI say the document is misleading, by the way. So it is. I mean, when you read it, I mean, it came out. It was like on CNN. They looked petrified when it was coming out. Oh my God, the memo's out!
Well, because you wanted to digest it quickly, but there's a danger in doing that. And then 3.5 pages later,
and I went online,
a ton of meat,
and I tried to download it, you know, over and over and over again, and then finally was able to get it because the server was it's a government server. Which just tells you how bad that is. The government server couldn't handle the amount of traffic looking for it.
I heard some of the anchors complaining about that, saying, yeah, we're trying to get online and actually get it and download it. But I'm sure it was quite the demand at that very moment.
It was like a dial-up that they've got at the government. So, anyway, the point is, when you read it, you're like, wait, is this it? As a matter of fact, that's exactly what Comey tweeted about
exactly
it after it was out.
Tweeted.
Is this it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, basically what it does, it claims that the FBI and justice officials were aware that the author of the so-called Steele dossier used to secure the FISA warrant to surveil Trump campaign advisor Carter Page had a strong anti-Trump bias. So they're saying that Christopher Steele was out to get Donald Trump. The dossier was a political hit job dossier, which is what the president's been saying about it the whole time, and that they use that as they went to the FISA court judge and used this dossier to prove that they needed to continue to overhear Carter Page because they thought he had been co-opted by the Russians and he was working for Donald Trump at the time.
Right.
Now, there is one problem with that.
There are a few.
Well, yes, there are a few. One of the main problem is that can't be the only piece of evidence that they took to the judge, right? So there are other pieces of evidence. So that's one of the things.
We heard Paparetti talk about it. He's been in this situation before. They're typically 70 pages or so of documents
and other
substance that would have to go along with that. That to think that might only rely on one dossier or one document wouldn't really stack up.
The second part is that in order to bring that and not it, and for it not to be perjury, there would have to be verified pieces of that dossier. They couldn't bring a completely fictitious document to the FISA court, because if they did that, that would be perjury. So now there's that. That might have been, this might have been the ultimate perjury trap set for the Republicans in this.
Interesting.
Because it's like, if they, so that then begs the question, are there parts of the dossier that have been proven to be true by, and accepted as true by judges? That's a big issue. So there's that. Now, we move on to just say this. I got to play a little tape for you. The president spoke on the issue today. He reacted in a press availability at the White House.
I think it's terrible. You want to know the truth? I think it's a disgrace. What's going on in this country? I think it's a disgrace. The memo was sent to Congress. It was declassified. Congress will do whatever they're going to do. But I think it's a disgrace what's happening in our country. And when you look at that, and you see that and so many other things, what's going on, a lot of people should be ashamed of themselves, and much worse than that. So I sent it over to Congress. They will do what they are going to do. Whatever they do is fine. It was declassified. And let's see what happens. But a lot of people should be ashamed.
Not a lot of meat on that bone. Just a lot. It was sort of a word salad of everybody. That's like if the kids came in and they wrecked the car. Right, and that's the kind of speech that you give to the kids, because he's not really deep. He's not saying what was wrong about it.
No, and he's not pointing any strong fingers at all. But look, a lot of people want to hear the Democratic response to this. Some people are saying they want to see the actual redacted version of the FISA explanation or application. There are
that
calls
will probably
for,
not come out.
I can't imagine, but that's out there. The transcripts of McCabe's talks with the House Intelligence Committee. People would like to see that, because there's a lot of there are varying stories about whether or not he said that he knew that the surveillance warrant was based partially or mostly on the dossier, and if it weren't for the dossier, it wouldn't have been granted.
That's the question. Did Andrew McCabe
central questions
say to the House Intelligence Committee that they would that were those his exact words? That and that's what Republicans, it's in this memo, Republicans are hanging their hat on this notion, or at least Devin Nunes is hanging his hat.
Well, others have come up, they've been speaking out today, others who were in that room, Republicans, are saying they heard that as well. And then
Democrats were in that room, say they did not hear that.
Correct.
So there's a transcript, thank God, of that, so we will find out. Now, the question then came up in front of the president, what about this Rod Rosenstein? Your deputy attorney general, are you going to keep him?
Does it make you more likely to hire Rosenstein? Do you feel that confidence in him?
You figure that one out.
Gosh. Are you going to fire Rosenstein? You figure that one out. I don't think this is going the way he thought it was going to go. And this was right as it was coming out. I can't imagine now, 5-6 hours later, how he's feeling about this, because it's not hitting with the kind of impact he thought it was going to hit, I don't think. So here is the president leaving on board Marine One. He's walking across the lawn to get to the helicopter, and this is what the press was screaming at him.
Did you have sex with a porn star?
Are you going to fire Rosenstein? Are you going to fire Rosenstein? Will you have a press conference anytime soon?
Oh, God.
Can you stop and talk for a while? Have confidence.
If you have sex with a porn star, are you worried about the show? Happy Friday.
Happy what? Was
Friday.
Friday. Oh.
Oh, my God.
All right. That is American politics 2018 style. Did you have sex with a porn star? Are you worried about the Dow? And are you going to fire the deputy attorney general?
Are you going to fire Rosenstein?
You can actually hear that over the jet engine. That's really remarkable.
Oh, my God.
Can you stop and talk for a while?
Yeah. Good Happy luck. Friday!
I feel like that might be also the way, though, that President Donald Trump's thoughts are happening in his head anyway.
Right. Oh, God, I remember having sex with a porn star. Oh, was that good?
Is the Dow good today? No,
Dow is bad. I feel bad about that. I hope Rod Rosenstein gets fired. Oh, wait, I have to fire him. No, I can't fire him. Can I fire him? Get Sessions on the phone.
will you have a press conference?
Oh, I didn't think I should have a press conference.
So he didn't answer any of those, we're going to go with.
All I can think about is that porn star. Over and over, Stormy. Stormy.
Making it rain.
All up in here.
Oh, God. I don't know. You imagine being in his head. It's got to be a blizzard in his head. Because the words come out in a blizzard. They don't come out in the order in which they start in his head in one order, and they come out of his mouth in another. I don't know. I think it's like a shark. I think because he doesn't sleep a lot, right? We've been told that. Mm-hmm. I think only half of his brain is awake at any given moment. And the other half, it's all rattling around.
I really hope Melania is not mad at me about that porn star thing. What do I care?
What do I care? That's exactly what he's thinking.
Who am I playing golf with tonight? Do I have time to get 9 in before the sun goes down?
All right, checking in at...
Number 4.
A father of one of the Larry Nassar's victims tried to attack him at a sentencing hearing in Eaton County, Michigan this morning. Mm-hmm. Cops immediately tackled Randall Margraves before he was taken out of the court in handcuffs.
Opportunity to save
him. I would ask you to, as part of the sentencing, to grant me 5 minutes in a locked room with this demon.
I have
would
a feeling.
Would you do that?
That is not
yes
how our...
No,
sir, I can't
do that.
Would
you give me 1 minute?
You know that I can't do that. That's not how our legal system...
He's father of three, actually, girls who saw this particular guy, Larry Nassar. And, you know, you don't believe in mob rule, but wow, that dad. He just... I can only imagine what he's going through.
Now, she decided not to hold him in contempt or penalize the father there.
No, she said she wouldn't do that.
This is what she said back in the courtroom after the incident. This is him. I'm sorry. This is the father after the courtroom incident.
I'd like to apologize to everyone in the courtroom and all the officers. We're finding outstanding officers are forced to deal with my outburst. I've dealt with my daughters as of late very delicately. I'm realizing they may never trust a man again. Then I got to hear that, and I look over here, and Larry Nassar's shaking his head no, like it didn't happen. Who would put herself through this?
Yeah, three daughters abused by him, and he's talking about the lasting impact of that, which is very real in a lot of those cases.
All right, we'll get to your three, your two, and your one, and then the Canarble wagon will roll. The faster we get through the top five and
finally.
Five, the faster we get to the Canarble wagon. But first, Judy tells us what's coming up in the bottom of the hour from the WGN Newsroom.
All right. Early mornings this winter, stay safe, stay connected with Morgan Kochmeyer's weather forecast, Sarah Gendra's traffic reports, weekdays 4 to 6 on WGN TV Morning News.
Okay, programming change, Canarble wagon coming up after the top five at five. And on the top five at five, we are up to...
Number 3.
NFL stars took to the trash talk off the field last night for the latest edition of Jimmy Kimmel's popular segment, Mean Tweets. Athletes past and present, including Rashad Jennings, Terry Bradshaw, Peyton Manning, Travis Kelce, sat down ahead of Sunday's Super Bowl to read the cruelest moments their social media haters have published about them.
Terry Bradshaw looks like someone who is going to a Halloween party as Terry Bradshaw.
That's a compliment, my friend.
Peyton Manning is the only NFL player that looks like the mascot of the team for which he plays. Hashtag horseface.
Andrew Crabtree looks like he should be playing bass for Prince in the Revolution. That guy.
I find it hilarious that Akeem Tlaib tries to act all hard and when the hardest thing he's ever done was shoot himself in the leg. I'm gone.
All right.
It's a great bit.
It's a great bit. I've often wondered if they're real or does Jimmy write them himself?
Yeah.
Jimmy was in a bad car accident. Did
I
you see
that?
That?
Was it on the way to the awards ceremony or something? I thought he crashed. He pretty much overturned his vehicle.
Yeah. And, he's okay.
He's all right. Yeah. And everybody's okay.
Fox News pronounced him dead, I think, at the scene. all right, checking in at
number 2.
James Corden soundly defeated when he went head to head in a rap battle with Helen Mirren.
I played the queen, but also warriors and witches, crime lords and wizards, bosses and
Detectives and whores, from Altman to Shakespeare, the only role you ever play is guy who begged to be here. Poor James Corden will never be satisfied until you find a way to get attention deep fried. This battle is fun. I'm glad that you asked. It's the only bit you didn't find in Jimmy Fallon's trash.
Oh, my. I love Helen
Mirren.
Does
every late night show have to have a karaoke bit now with a celebrity? Every single one of these late night shows does this stuff.
You gotta love Helen Mirren doing though, because, you know, she's Helen Mirren.
It is stolen from Jimmy Fallon, though. It's a direct lift.
Fallon, Seth Meyers allowed? Does a bit now, too, where he sings with celebrities.
Next thing you're gonna see Fallon doing carpool karaoke. Then game on.
There's too many shows now, I think.
Well, they're all sort of, it's the point I think you're making, is they're all sort of feeling the same.
Yeah. I know. I know. All right. And finally.
Number one. I can make a ship sail on dry land.
We've lost our last Temptation.
Oh, sad.
Dennis Edwards, who joined the Temptations in 1968 and sang on a string of the group's greatest hits, has died. His family confirmed the news, saying he was here in Chicago at the time. Edwards, who was singing with the Contours previously to the Temptations, joined the Hitmakers when David Ruffin was fired. And, you know, the Temptations at that point were very, you know, sort of soulful and kind of in that soul pop thing. Mm-hmm. And then what was interesting, I think, about Dennis Edwards is he brought that kind of that late 60s energy and kind of screamy energy, like anger kind of thing to the whole deal. Mm-hmm. Right. Which also, by the way, he had to replace. It was gritty. Right. Mm-hmm. And then they had their biggest hit of all. Papa was a rolling stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home. All he left us was alone. Dennis Edwards was 74.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems. Yeah! Drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here. I want one bourbon, one shot, one beer. One bourbon, one shot, one beer.
Tastes great, makes women appear more attractive, and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life, and I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it. I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Did you have sex with the porn star?
Are you going to fire Rosenstein? Will you have a press conference anytime soon? Can you stop and talk for a while?
That last one sounded uglier than it really was.
Yes. Can you stop and chat for a little while?
That's what he said.
That's what
I know, it sounded worse.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's so what they were yelling at the president on the way to the helicopter today. But you know what? When I walk into the building here, I often get the same questions.
From Michigan Avenue?
Did you sleep with a porn star, and am I going to fire Rosenstein? Who's my accountant? That's a different guy. It's a different Rosenstein.
Say Happy Friday.
Like, yeah, and then Happy Friday. That's what goes on. That's you know.
Well, you're used to it.
I feel a great kinship there. Canarble Wagon is rolling. I know.
Yay.
It's rolling at 5:40, but this
finally
is the new thing on Fridays. It's
going to. Although I'm not sure we can wait this long.
I have already received a complaint by way of email from one of our
regular Canarble
Wagoners. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure it throws people off. They're driving home. You know, this is the time when you start thinking about your weekend.
Yes. Well, now it's time to start thinking about the weekend. And Canarble Wagon is brought to you by It's Just Lunch. And here is one of my favorite restaurants. I had no idea you guys were coming in today, and here you are. One of my favorite restaurants on the planet Earth, Mott Street in Chicago.
So good.
And Chef Edward Kim, who is a master. Mm-hmm. You are a master,
absolutely,
sir.
You're too kind.
Yeah, you got
I've
it
heard.
All. Got it all figured out in there, and it's... people like to say Asian fusion. I don't think that really describes what you guys do at all. It's sort of like there's a lot of Asian influence, certainly, in what you do. But you're taking things that, and I just am always amazed at this because you move the menu around, you know, seasonally, and, you know, you come up with something new. You'll take something that is like like an Eastern European thing and all of a sudden throw an Asian flair into it. And I suppose it's the fusing of two things, but I have never had a bad bite ever in your restaurant.
It's all working somehow. Wow.
Thank you so much. Yeah, the way we try to characterize is a Chicago restaurant. And growing up in Chicago, you have so much different cultures out here and stuff. So automatically, if you look in any person's cabinet who's grown up in Chicago, you have Mexican food in there, Polish food in there,
right,
Asian food. So it's automatically fusion. But, you know, you get the term fusion from like the 80s, and it has such a bad connotation, and that's because it was forced together.
But yeah, it was the fusion came in the same time as the sun-dried tomato came in.
I know, and that hasn't left either.
And every once in a while you hear fusion or you see a sun-dried tomato, and it better be damn good if you're going to have it. So it is what it is. I noticed the fun thing about Mott Street, and in the winter it's a little different than the summer because you got a really cool outdoor space in the summer that people go to. And this is on Ashland, by the way, 1401 North Ashland, between Chicago Avenue and near Division, right? Just north of Division, north of Division, I should say, between Division and North. And you have when you watch the kitchen work, it is the most fascinating thing. You have the happiest people working there.
Oh, that says something.
That is an
that
amazing
means a
deal.
Lot.
It does. I mean, and people are so proud of what they're doing. And it's a small space. It's not a gigantic space. But, you know, often you go to a restaurant and say, what are you going to have, honey? You know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You got people who are really totally in to, you know, what it is that you've created there.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it is the people that work there. And I really think that... you can, as cheesy as it may sound, you can taste whether or not the people care about what they're making. You look at so many other restaurants in that area. I mean, there's so many great Chicago restaurants, but...
Especially in that area, yeah.
Yeah, we're all using kind of the same ingredients, like carrots, onions, that kind of thing. But what is different is maybe the technique behind it and the heart behind it. And so you come into our place, one of the things that I love about it is that so many people there genuinely... care about what they're doing and they love what they're doing, and I think that really speaks out to the guests and stuff, and hopefully you guys are able to taste it as well.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at your menu, and these are the menus I hate because there's like seven or eight things I want like right now, right? So there's the Szechuan pepper shrimp, the black cod, the catfish clay pot.
That's amazing.
I know, I'm like, I just need to have that now. Are any of these shareable, or are these really you just got to keep coming back and back and taste everything?
I mean, we want you coming back and back, so that's a good thing that there's too many things on the menu to eat all at once, you know, but at the same time, we're really into the idea of sharing and feasting.
They have the share plates. When you see the share meal come out, because there's like a steak, and then then they will do another separate thing. Uh-huh. You know, it's like it comes out, and it is. It's a little Game of Thronesy. I'm not going to lie to you. It shows up, and it's like a gigantic board, but. What a chef has done here and the people do, they take real care in terms of making sure that when it arrives, it's like a piece of art. There's so much going on it that, and, you know, and they even to the little sprigs of little green things. I don't even know what the hell they are.
Do you eat those?
I'll eat anything. And they're all kind of spread out perfectly in a design. I mean, it's a very special experience.
It
people
seems
should
like
should
it.
Definitely try this. That's for sure. And you have a beverage director here with us. We like to say that, but I prefer bartender. But
thank you.
Glorified bartender.
Yes. No, he's more than that. But Nate has poured a few drinks.
Yes.
That's the other piece of this, too. You have a really unique liquor selection. And what you've done, you've curated a bunch of stuff that people wouldn't normally see. So if you want a certain type of aperitif or whatever, it's not going to be necessarily what you would normally get.
Yeah, I mean, the fun thing is I have my boss, Chef Edward Kim, doesn't drink, so he lets us do whatever we want, because he's like, I trust you guys, and he's been really great to work with, because he puts a lot of trust in us. And I always laugh, because people do come in and are like, I hear this is an Asian fusion joint. And then you look at the bar, and half the bar is Italian Amaro, because
right.
I like Italian Amaro, so that's what we use. But yeah, no, it's a really fun program. We're doing some really great cocktails right now. Today, we're getting ready for Super Bowl Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
First, I mean, I want to get, you know, the star of the show today is Chef Kim and his everything wings that we're going to be offering for Super Bowl delivery through Caviar.
Oh, no, that's
so we brought some
idea.
Of those for you guys to try today.
Oh, my word.
And then I brought some, instead of, I know we usually do cocktails when I came in, but I thought Super Bowl, it's beer. You know, you can't do wings without beer. You know,
that's
they
true.
Say every
they
time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. Every time you eat wings without beer, somewhere a frat boy loses a game of bags and it doesn't know.
Isn't that
why.
True,
it's
Kevin?
Very sad.
Isn't that
so
absolutely
you can't
true?
Do it. It's criminal to do wings without beer. So I brought three local beers that I think are really food friendly that I really like with the wings. But
it's like milk and cookies. They go hand in hand.
Exactly.
Peanut
exactly.
butter and jelly.
Yep.
So I'll give the floor to Chef to talk about the wings first.
Thank you, Mike. So Mike Malazzo, our bar director.
I'm sorry, Mike. I called you Nate. I don't know why I called you Nate.
That's for your well, other bar. Oh, your other bar.
I never know.
You get confused.
I never know. That's right. This is Nate's over there. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, we're super excited to offer our wings for Super Bowl. They're going to be offered on Sunday. You guys can call until 6.
Until 6 on Sunday?
6 on Sunday.
So you guys... No, I got to figure this out. So if you call... You guys at Mott Street, yep. M-O-T-T, by the way, Mott mm-hmm. Street, M-O-T-T Street, in Chicago. Like, you don't have to pre-order these on, like, today or tomorrow?
We suggest, we recommend pre-ordering them. We're hoping we won't run out and yeah. stuff, but, you know, we're
going to... Because by 6 o'clock on Sunday, I'm going to tell you something, Chef, you're going to be done.
Yeah.
When we're done talking about these things, because I've had your wings, it's
they're
insane.
Phenomenal.
Thank you. Well, we're hoping, too, because we want to watch the game also. You know,
yeah.
Mike's
oh,
gonna,
I see.
Mike's yeah. going to come in, and he's going to bring his TV, and I'll be cooking wings, and...
I'll be watching.
He'll be cracking some beers while I'm cooking them.
Can you explain something here in Roe? You'll like this. The way you explain it on your menu is crispy wings glazed with soy, jaggery, and dried chilies.
Mm-hmm. Jaggery.
Did you know jaggery?
Well, that's
one
that,
of your words.
That is a that actually is that's an adjective.
You use it a different way
for me. Yes. Yeah.
What does jaggery
what
mean?
Is
jaggery means you're like you're acting like a jag. It's like a complete jaggery. This is going on there.
But that's different than when it comes to the food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So jaggery is a term for unrefined sugar. That comes from Southeast Asia. So it's like a really unprocessed brown sugar.
Why do you,
brown sugar.
Why do you think right now, Chef, I just have noticed this amazing blossoming of Korean flavors, profiles, product being used in not just here. I mean, obviously this has now been almost 5 years, 6 years now that it's really, really exploded here. Yes.
They love Korean barbecue, everything Korean. Well, my friends are always like, dude, there's a new Korean barbecue place we got to go to.
It's and Chicago has had a Korean neighborhood, a Korean restaurant scene for decades, right, on Lawrence
one of
Avenue.
The best.
That people have, you know, that people who know to go have gone. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, you drive, it used to be, you can tell it's changing now because you used to be able to drive down that street. And there was the street signs were in Korean. Nothing was in English. But now it's in English and Spanish and Korean. So that means something must be going right there. Property values are going up.
It's getting gentrified.
Yes, exactly. But sure. What do you think it is about the Korean influence here? What's going on there?
I mean, a huge part of it is, not to bore you with like history, but after the Korean War, which was like in the 1950s, you had a huge influx of immigrants. And mm-hmm. so you had the first generation of immigrants coming here from Korea. And now it's now you have the second generation. And so as much as the first generation wanted all their children to be doctors and lawyers, some of them decided to cook instead. And so you're seeing that influence. And, you know, for me, I'm Korean-American. So part of me is Korean, but I'm very much American, you know. And so that... having that influence, and
that's why you get cabbage rolls with basically a kimchi cabbage roll. Essentially, is what's going on here,
which people view as. I mean, all the ingredients in there are completely Korean, but like the technique is French.
Uh-huh.
And then you'll have somebody tell me that it tastes like their Italian grandmother made it.
Oh, yeah. My God.
That's true. That makes sense. That's true. That's the craziest damn thing about this place, yeah. is that it's not definable. As it's just great. It's definable. It's sort of, you're like, oh, my God. And I think, Chef, by calling it like a complete Chicago experience, it's true. It's like the melting pot that is or should be America, and the melting pot that is for sure Chicago. You know, happens in what you're doing. It's really, really, really
no question.
Cool.
Growing up, though, when you had Korean food, I bet a lot of people probably weren't that hip to what it was.
Oh no, it was horrifying as a child. Like,
bring your lunch to school
because it takes 18 days to boil kimchi. Doesn't it?
Like, what's that?
Having kids or having friends come over and grandma was cooking something, you'd be so embarrassed. And but growing up with that, now that's a huge part of. The cooking that I do
influence.
And I wouldn't be the cook that I am if grandma wasn't embarrassing me as a child.
Yeah.
How about that?
There you go.
Isn't that true?
That's really
and you
great
see kimchi
stuff.
On every menu now, don't you?
That's true. But I can't get enough of it.
I love
and
it.
The thing is, this is not by its nature a Korean restaurant either.
No, it's just,
it's got that influence. It's got, fusion is the right word, but I just refuse to use it. But
you
it
just
is,
did.
It is, it, but it, it just is an amazing thing to experience. And again, it's a really fun night. And bring a group of people because you got these communal tables. You've got it's like a sea experience. You just throw yourself into it, and it is just a ton of fun. And it's a very hard reservation to get.
Yes.
I have noticed.
Is so. Brunch harder than regular time, or are you really packed at? What's the dinner or what's harder to get in?
They're both doing well and stuff, so but
get a reservation
I'm
the one standing at the host stand most days when I'm there managing, so it's definitely worth it if you can to always get a reservation, because we want to make sure that we can always
Mike has seen me come in on my knees
I've seen you come in. Last time I saw you were saving someone's life. So
there's a story for another time.
I came around the corner and he was saving someone was having a little trouble chewing, and
oh
Ro
my gosh,
popped up.
Ro.
Wait, what?
And,
what happened here?
Yeah.
What?
I was outside on the patio, and I walked inside to say hello to Ro, and a gentleman was having trouble chewing and like just popped up, gave him the Heimlich.
Dang.
And acted like
Ro's a hero.
Happened.
No big deal.
Very heroic, very classy.
Oh my gosh.
I just sat back down and just kept eating. It's so good. That's what happens in a moment like that. I'm like okay, fine, whatever.
Hero.
Hey, you're fine, pal. Listen, don't interrupt my meal again.
That was a real Ro strong moment.
Like a real one. Like one we haven't really heard of before. Anything like that.
It was like one moment I can earnestly say to a guest, like, you're the real hero. You're the real heroes here, and we gave him a shot of whiskey. And
give him a cape. There you go.
Yes, that happened too. I remember the shot of whiskey. All right. Well, mention the beers, Mike. What are the three
Absolutely.
Chicago beers?
So I just brought three beers that if you guys come get some wings from us on Sunday, and then if you're going to Benny's to get stuff to share with friends, these are three that I would recommend. They're all local, locally brewed beers. But they're all very approachable. The first two
nice.
We'll talk about are from Hopewell. Hopewell's over in Logan Square, right off Milwaukee. If you haven't been, they have a really killer tap room.
Mm-hmm.
Samantha, Steven, and Jonathan, the owners, very just incredible people. They're usually there, fun to talk to. And they brew beer that even if you're not a craft beer nerd,
and I'm not, but I
enjoy.
Love this.
This is the smoked beer. That's
yeah, so
a lot
the
of
first
attention.
One here is called their Front Room. It's a cherrywood smoked Vienna lager.
It's amazing.
So the malt that they get
so
from
good.
Michigan gets smoked with cherrywood. And a Vienna lager, to begin with, is a little bit, it's copper colored. It has these like richer toasty notes to it already. So the cherrywood smoke just accentuates that. This is going to go great with any kind of like Super Bowl food, nachos, wings, anything you're doing. The second one from Hopewell that mm-hmm. we brought is their first lager. It's called first lager because it's the first beer that they brewed. Again, if you have uncles coming over, people who don't, that you know, who really just stick to the
they don't want
to
get too crafty
stuff, they'll love this. I mean, it is a solid beer. It's a beautifully brewed beer, but again, it's very approachable. It's not just for guys with neck beards who love triple, quadruple IPAs. This is anyone can drink this beer, and it's going to go great with food. And then the last one I brought is another
awesome.
Local place that we love, Ari over at Maplewood. They have they're a brewery and distillery. They have a really killer lounge over in Avondale where you can check out the space, enjoy some of the stuff that they're brewing. This is called their Son of Juice. It's their American
IPA. It is
IPA.
Sort of like Son of Juice, isn't it? It's got sort of a fruity thing happening there.
Very, very juicy beer. The hop presence, it is an IPA, but it's not – gonna just overwhelm you with bitterness.
It's got these really
nice tropical fruit notes. This one especially is gonna go well with the wings.
You do taste the tropicality.
Because it's sweet with the sweet there. Exactly. There you go.
Yummy.
All right, the Carnarvon Wagon is rolling. I know it's a new time for the Carnarvon Wagon 540, but the Carnarvon Wagon is out, and it's the best Carnarvon Wagon of all times right here, right now. Brought to you by It's Just Lunch right now. Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour in the WGN newsroom? Mississippi Delta right now.
So good. Perfect.
That's a white kid who's a ginger. I can't figure it out.
He's like Joe Kennedy with less chapstick, right?
Yes. That's Michael McInerney. And I can't, and I don't, and now I got to say, he's got the damn thing, he's got a stage mother with him.
And we've heard about how good he is from the stage mom, and she's right.
And you might know her from that other show on this radio station from the Bill and Wendy show. Wendy Snyder. This is Michael McInerney, who we've been hearing about now. For the last couple of years, because as you know, he's now 18, which is hard for me to believe, because I think I remember when you were born, which kind of freaks me out.
Now I'm legal.
Yep. And well, sort of, depending on the state and the reason.
Yeah.
But this is you know, as you've been the one thing that I love about this is that that you and Jimmy, who's sitting here, and Jimmy's like, he's like, it's like Penn and Teller. He doesn't say anything, and you do all the talking. Just like the most amazing thing. But I don't know how goes. I don't know how that goes on the podcast, but I do know that it's working okay. It's like when we would see you here the last couple of years, and Wendy was always like, I gotta go. We're going to practice. You're going to a show, or you're going to whatever it is. And here it is. And now this is a real deal with this young man, isn't it?
He's remarkable.
He's pretty darn good, I got to tell you that. And I kind of wanted to hide in the shadows because I want him to make it on his own merits.
Yes.
And I already did a show today.
I understand.
You know, I want to sit back and...
And you're not getting paid for this. I think that's the...
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
I think we have chicken wings over here,
no,
if that helps anybody.
I'm good.
No.
By the way, welcome back from your extended vacation with your knee.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
I am glad to come back to a job. Last time I got a knee replacement, I got fired.
Right when you came back?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
it's crazy how this radio business works.
Those,
you know,
SOBs. I seem to remember who those people were who did that to you. Yeah,
bad people.
I blocked them out.
Yeah, no, I can't. I have an entire room in my home that is like a shrine to some of those folks, and then I go and I burn candles and, you know, other things. And you know,
it's kind of weird,
Michael. This is stuff you don't need to know about your parents or about me. That's the one. That's an important thing.
Yeah, I kind of stopped listening.
Yeah, good. It's a better way to go. All right, tell us a little bit about what. All right, so obviously you grew up in a you know, show folk family, and this is it. But you know, these are not really musicians here. These two. I don't care what they say. Why did you? What drew you to the guitar? And what drew you to this? Because this is like this whole Delta blues thing that you're doing.
Well, okay, it does kind of come back to my parents. Mostly, you know, my dad is the biggest Led Zeppelin fan, and I will argue with anyone. Mm-hmm. I can bring up a show, and he can just tell me, you know, on what bootlegs there are live performances of this, and mm-hmm. what years those are, and all that. But
So what you're saying to me is he's Jimmy Zepp, is what he is, as opposed
Jimmy
to Elton
Zepp.
Jim. Yeah, okay,
yeah,
got it.
It's Jimmy Zepp.
Yeah.
Through both of my parents, I was able to find all this older music, but particularly through my dad's interest in Led Zeppelin, I was able to find, you know, the old blues stuff.
That stuff they ripped off.
Yeah, the stuff they ripped
off. For sure. Well, they acknowledge that, though. You know, that Jimmy Page acknowledges that all they were doing, it was just trying to take those blues guys that they grew up listening to, or they loved, because when they were growing up in the, you know, in the 50s in England, that was that was the illegal music. You know, that was the stuff that those guys were getting and they were listening to and they were grooving on, like that honey mead wine that dude has been recently grooving on. I just think it's an interesting thing though to bring it back now, to have that sort of just be such an incredible influence. So do you do I would hate to even have you do this, because trying to be Jimmy Page or trying to do what he does, it's like that many have gone there, and unhappily, how do you talk about that influence, talk about the Led Zeppelin influence.
Well, I do all the guitar faces, you know, like the
the poser faces.
Yeah.
but everybody does duck lips on the internet anyway, on Instagram. Yeah. So it's
kind of
okay
practice.
Yeah. I mean, as far as, you know, I'm a very big fan of Led Zeppelin, as well as, you know, a lot of other older music. But
do your friends in high school think that you're goofy for that? Because the millennials here, they don't even know who Led Zeppelin is.
Well,
until that Thor movie came out, they had no idea.
The funny thing is, most of my friends know who Led Zeppelin is, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's cool.
I love him.
Yeah. I love him. And then I mentioned something like Donovan, or like, I'm like, Fleetwood Mac used to be a blues band, and they're like, no, it wasn't. Stop talking. Wow. You know, I'm very alienating.
See what you're doing there. I see what you're doing there. All right, so now you have you have your first single out, and a single and B-side. This is talk about old school.
Yeah, how about that?
B-side. Do you have a record printer or a presser down in your
not yet
in your basement?
No. We're working on it.
He has vinyl. He's just an old soul. I swear he should be a 1970s hippie type. He should, at 18.
I bathe more, though.
Yeah, that's good. When you play, though, do your friends like the music when they hear it, even though maybe it's not what they're used to?
You know,
I like the way you said that. Not used to?
Well, right, you're saying they don't really get deep on Led Zeppelin. They don't really maybe connect to that type of music. But when they hear you, I'm just wondering, what do they say?
It's a mixed reaction, sure, because some people, you know, when I go up there and I'm playing, like, slide guitar, they're like, dude, that was awesome! Uh-huh. And, like, you know, a lot of kids don't even know what a slide is.
Right.
And for those of you in the audience who don't know what a slide is, instead of just going, I can go. So, like, you can play all the in-between notes.
Mm. Very Robert Johnson of you. Drop his name.
And that's what he's into more than Led Zeppelin. I mean, you gave Led Zeppelin a shout-out because Dad is here.
No,
I mean,
in all honesty, I did turn him on to things like Zeppelin and the Stones and the Who. And and he took it a step deep. He wanted to see who influenced them. So that's what really impressed me the most about his dive into musical history, especially American musical history. The kid just has an insatiable appetite for it. And he impresses me. Now he schools me on music.
Well, the opening guitar riff, I mean, was right out of Robert Johnson, right? It was right out of that whole, like, kind of that blues movement that came up to Chicago, that, you know, was born in Mississippi and Arkansas.
Absolutely.
And all those places, and those guys got on the trail and they came up here and they made this home, and that's like that's the true American art form, right? It's
the only
one uninfluenced by anybody else.
Mm-hmm. And those bands from England, from London, the Stones and the Who and Led Zeppelin, they were influenced by American blues.
Yeah.
So when they came back to the United States for the first time, these British bands, they were playing these old blues songs thinking the kids were going to go crazy for it because that's their music. Little did they know, they were turning American kids onto the blues
because
they were into it, but American kids weren't really into it.
It's your son's interview.
To
they're sharing. By the way, I just want to point out they're sharing a microphone like the Partridge Family over here.
It's so cute.
I love this. This is what I live with every day.
How do you do that? I mean, swear to God, I've known your parents for a really long time. How are you doing this?
I could tell you.
I know. I want to just congratulate. Not only are you a virtuoso, congratulations on surviving this. That's all I'm going to say.
It's so
really
sweet.
Good. All right. Well, you know what? Let's take a little time out, as we like to say. Pause for the cause. We'll ring the cash box. I'm using every radio piece of jargon I can think of, and then we will come back and let's play the hit. Let's play the single. You want to do that?
Sure.
All right, we're going to do that on the other side. Michael McInerney is with us. He stands on his very own. I'm turning off the parents' microphone right now, and he is. Wait till you hear this. I mean, he's 18 years old, and I swear to God, and he's
incredible.
He's from he proves that a kid growing up in a nice, in the nice Chicago suburbs, uh-huh. Can really have the blues. And we're gonna prove that on the other side. But first, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour from the WGN newsroom? All right, it is the Ro Con Show with Anna DeVlantis. Yes. It's Live Music Friday, and we have a very special guest in the studio with us now. He's a young man. But he's old and wise in his soul. You can tell right now. Michael McInerney. And Michael has got a new single out with a B-side. Now, for those of us old enough to remember what that means,
Let's explain it to the kids.
But we'll explain to the kids afterwards. We just wanted to play his music. You don't know nothing yet. Michael McInerney.
Up come Plain Jane in a diamond silk shirt, thinking of a new lover who lives in the dirt. The younger woman gives him what he needs, while Jane stands by and always disagrees, saying, "You don't know nothing yet. You don't know nothing yet. You don't know nothing yet. Don't you forget." Bloody Mary told me in her sleep a story about the fish that swim in the deep. She buttons her feet and unties her shoes. She's always giving me the secondhand blues, saying, "You don't know nothing yet. You don't know nothing yet. You don't know nothing yet. Don't you forget." That wasn't very long. I'm a king of hearts in the dirty water city, which broke my heart and filled me with pity, saying, "You don't know nothing yet. You don't know nothing yet. You don't know nothing yet. Don't you forget." People come and people go, and over time it begins to show. The company's nice, but not something I need. My poems will still have someone to read, saying, "You don't know nothing yet. You don't know nothing yet. You don't know nothing yet. Don't you forget."
Wow.
Woo!
All right. See, now that's what I'm talking about right
there.
That
was awesome.
Do you hear that? Do you hear that sort of...
I can't believe he's 18.
I know. And it's a song. It's interesting because it is a song about, sort of being... Also knowing that you don't know anything yet, which is really very important. I would like you, Michael, to be able to explain that to the kids who work on the show, actually, if you wouldn't mind.
All right.
Yeah. Because they think they know everything and they don't know nothing yet.
I'm fine.
Yes. There you go. See, yeah. It's exactly that attitude that has got us completely upside down.
Just sit them down for a little bit, okay?
By the way. All right,
stop showing us up, Michael.
That's the single. It's at Michael Mack Music, M-A-C, by the way, michaelmackmusic.bandcamp.com.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to be tomorrow at a benefit concert, which is going to be held at the Ballydoyle Pub, right, in Downers Grove.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have that right? That's at what time are we doing that? 8 o'clock tomorrow night, right? And then Thursday, the 22nd of February, mm-hmm. just to get ahead of ourselves here, you're going to also be at Score Sports Center Restaurant and Bar in Willow Springs. See, now that you're 18, you can play bars. You just can't drink in them.
Yeah, when did you turn 18?
May.
Ooh. Wait, did you say the 22nd of February?
Oh no! I just bring it up.
I almost just said a bad word right there. I almost said I was going to say for God's sake, and then I almost said the bad word for sake. You know? Oh God!
I'm just reminding the people the 22nd of February is when this event is, and that's also my
birthday.
Yeah, it's her birthday. Oh my God! Do you know
we all
got a text from her yesterday that it was like, "Hey, it's my birthday month."
Well, it is
February 1st.
And Auntie Anne's didn't forget. They sent me a free pretzel in my email.
Oh, you got it.
And then I got a 20%. Well, I didn't get the actual pretzel, but I got the coupon. And
Michael, how much would you charge to serenade her on her birthday?
15 hour.
Not enough is the answer. That's a $10,000 gig if you've ever seen one right there.
Well, I was just being polite.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Hey, there's a B-side to this. Now, let me explain that. Now, do you guys know what a B-side is, Violetta?
The flip side.
Yeah, there you go. And
see,
the flip side of what, though? What would it be that would have to be flipped?
The original idea. I don't know what you're getting at.
There you go. The original idea, which would have been a little record, which would have been a little 45, like a miniature little vinyl disc.
Oh, right, like a floppy disk.
Yeah, it looks like a floppy disk. Right. There you go. That's how we're getting. And then you had this little thing. You had this little thing that you put in the middle of it. No, before I got to the needle, you had to put this little thing in the middle of it, like a little disc in the middle of it so it would fit on your turntable.
Like a microwave, when the thing's not on right after you wash it.
Yeah.
It just wobbles a little bit.
Right.
Why don't you guys just play it off your phone?
Oh, gosh.
And then you'd put that down and it would go at 45 revolutions per minute. But you see, now you're going to be able to download this at... why don't you do this? I want you to do this right now. Download it at michaelmackmusic.bandcamp.com. We'll come back and we'll hear what the B-side is. And that just describes the fact that it's another song. It doesn't actually sound... that's not a style. Do you guys understand that?
Got it.
Okay, thank you.
Taking notes.
All right. More music from... Michael Mack and Ernie, or Michael Mack. I don't know. All of a sudden, my inner agent is popping out of me.
That happens to you sometimes.
Baby, darling, sweetheart, booby, listen. I think we're going to, I have plans. I'm only taking 40% to start.
You're going to be huge.
Oh, God. Even I know that's bad.
Yeah, see? Thank God.
Be careful for agents like that, okay? Because they're going to come after you. Watch out.
All right. More live music coming your way. But first, right now, Judy Pilek has got the WGN News.
Shirt thinking of a new lover who lives in the dirt. Well, the younger woman gives him what he needs while Jane stands by and always disagrees, saying, "You don't know nothing yet."
All right, now you heard that in the studio from Michael McInerney. And that's the record version. Now, I want to just point out something here about that, is that Michael plays every one of those instruments on that record.
How about that?
That is like that. That's Stevie Wonder territory right there.
Seriously,
it's kind of interesting that I was able to just pick up most of these things. And
really, you didn't have to. Were you classically trained, as they like to say?
Well, I was classically trained in voice, but you know, I just picked up a guitar, started learning that. I guess I was kind of classically trained in bass. But, you know, you don't remember what you learned in fourth grade.
Oh, so you started at that age, and then you picked up a guitar, and you just knew where the chords were, and that is like such an amazing skill.
It is.
Yeah, it took me a few years of trial and error, but now I can play a G chord.
Oh. See, I couldn't even do that. I wouldn't even know that's a G chord. I barely know what a G string is. I mean,
thank God. Oh, sorry, I had
to. He's 18.
No, thank God Ro doesn't know what a G string is because we don't want to see him in it. Sorry.
Wow.
I'll shut up again now.
Ro's a hero, Wendy. We learned that
never
today.
We never let the parents on the show.
There's a reason for that.
Even if they just got done with their own shift on this radio station, Wendy Snyder. Oh God! All right. So now you got this. That was the record we just played, but you did a version of it. There's a B side here. You're releasing two here simultaneously, the way they used to do it. When you released a single, there was a B side, and sometimes the B side was even better than the A side.
Didn't you
right?
love that?
Yeah, I'm not gonna comment on that because you know preference is preference, but I kind of like the B-side a little bit more.
I think the artist, I think that's actually a tradition in music, that the artist, when they were, when mm-hmm. and again, it was their managers who were doing it. Baby Darling Sweetheart, listen.
Bobby.
Listen, I know you love this song. It's not a hit. I'll tell you what a hit is, that You Don't Know Nothing song is a hit.
Yeah, that's going to get radio play.
That's going to get radio play. That's a radio hit. I know you want to go the other way. And then eventually what you do is you end up in a fight with your manager about that, and then you fire him.
Yeah.
That's what Elton John did every other hour on the hour, was fire his manager over it, and then they would fight about it, and then they would come back, and then they would kiss and make up. Literally. All right.
Still waiting for that kiss.
This is Fields of Amber is the B-side here. Mm-hmm. And what do you love about this song?
Well, so I'm into a lot of different kinds of music. I've shown that I'm into blues. I'm into, you know, like kind of mid-60s Dylan kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Rock, obviously. Mm-hmm. But this is a gentler side of Michael McInerney. One of the first guys after the Beatles who I really got into was the Scottish singer-songwriter Donovan.
Oh.
And he's the guy that did Mellow Yellow, you know.
Right. But that was another one of where the agent was telling him to do it, right?
Do you like the B-side too?
Mellow Yellow, you're going to love it. But that's not really, I mean, that's his style. He was very, very smart. The music was very, very smart.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But so I wanted to kind of showcase both, you know, the rock and roll side of me and the, you know,
sensitive artist.
Yeah, Paul Simon-esque.
Oh, I like that.
Kind of side.
Well, here he is, Michael McInerney and Fields of Amber.
Of you again last night, but woke up to find my pillow there instead, and I was lying on my bed, thoughts of you running through my head. Love can be pretty hard, wouldn't you say? Seems to get harder every day. I've got nothing to do except sit here missing you. It gets so hard. In fields of amber I can be found, looking for a love that is as true. On crooked wings my words fly through, and I send them straight to you. Love can be pretty hard, wouldn't you say? Seems to get harder every day. I've got nothing to do except sit here missing you. It gets so hard. Though you're miles away, and I'm not even sure how you feel. And is my love even real? Seems that time for me will reveal. Love can be pretty hard, wouldn't you say? Seems to get harder every day. I've got nothing to do except sit here missing you. It gets so hard, hard. It gets so hard, hard. It gets so hard.
All right. I'd sign him
so
right now.
Good. You better get on it, Agent Bubby Guy.
Listen, darling, Bubby Sweetheart, don't talk to your parents about this, but I'm going to sign you. It's only 80% is my commission.
But you're going to be huge.
High, I can't go wrong.
This is, and I'm telling you, I'm taking this as a favor to you. I think I've been told that by an agent. If I'm not mistaken.
Never a good thing.
This, I'm doing this totally as a favor to you. All right. Wow, there's a very that is a really so Donovan-esque kind of thing, because you're doing the whole vocal rides and all. Very, very cool. I'm telling you, this is the thing I hate about the music industry right now, is what? It's all kind of it's like it's American Idol-esque, right? It's this whole kind of competitive thing, and when you have something that you really love and that you're able to like push through, this isn't just about pop music. This is about introducing a sound to, you know, your audience that becomes popular, as opposed to just trying to push everything into a pop box. And I think that is really cool. That's it. Especially for people like, you know, my age. I'm a dinosaur, though. My daughter likes to tell me that. And so does my agent now. Let me really.
I'm doing this as a favor for you, dinosaur.
I'm doing it because you're a dinosaur now. I had you since you were 26, and now look at you. this is really great. All right,
really
so
incredible.
Michael Mack, this is how you get this music, by the way. The single is You Don't Know Nothing Yet, you heard that, and Fields of Amber. Michael Mack is 18 years old, and he is on his way. MichaelMackMusic.bandcamp.com. MichaelMackMusic.bandcamp.com. If you want to download these things, you can also go to Facebook and find the Michael Mack.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bubby Dylan, sweetheart, what are we going to do about the name? McIntyre, very hard to figure out how to spell.
What?
McInerney.
It's even harder to say.
Whatever.
You're a good agent. That,
by the way, that's what my agent would do it too. It would. That's exactly.
That's
has no idea. You know, my agent did not know how to spell my name. Honest to God, for like 10 years.
He sent you a contract. It's right. R O.
Yeah. Honest to God, that's what he did. Who sent me a note? R O. And I'm like, there's an E.
How long have we known each other?
Right.
But you always want to jazz up the names in the music
world. It
was
a K-H-A-N.
Right. Sometimes it was. Although he wouldn't have taken me if it were. All right. So, the point here is...
He's going to have to jazz up the name if he's got a booby agent.
Are you going
to
be Michael Mack or McInerney?
I've been thinking about this a while.
Don't tell your parents.
Well, Michael McInerney, while it's harder to say... And, you know, harder to spell, there's not already a Facebook page of a musician named Michael McInerney.
That's
so
true.
I have that market cornered.
Okay. It's unique.
Plus, there's just something more real about that. I mean, it doesn't have, like, you know, it's an average name for...
It's a name. It's a real name.
I think Michael Snyder would work. What do you think, Jimmy Mack?
God. Wendy Snyder.
I like McIntosh better.
I was going with McIntyre, even. Oh, yeah. No one knows how to spell that either. McIntyre. Go with McIntyre.
Snyder-tosh?
Is that an apple?
I don't know. It sounds good.
Snyder-tosh does kind of say Snyder-tosh as your stage name.
I love it, Boopy. You're now
I
Snyder-tosh.
I see it in lights. I can totally see it. Chicago Theater. Snyder-tosh.
That should be the band, though, actually. That would be the name of the band. All right, I want you to do one more song before we go, okay?
All right.
But you get to choose what it is you want to do.
All right. I'm going to...
What's the song you love performing the most that, like, you just get a total charge out of?
Ooh.
That you get people up and moving on in the live shows?
I think I'm going to do a little Ray Charles.
Oh!
I love Ray Charles.
Oh, that's a good tease.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, gee.
Wait, hold on. Don't do it yet. Stop. Hold on.
Okay.
This is what we call a tease.
Classic. These kids don't know anything, bro. It's classic radio tease.
Kevin. How old are you again, Kevin?
Thank God. This kid did not grow up in a radio household. Thank God. All right. Because we've never met his parents before, ever. We don't know who they are.
No.
That woman does sound slightly familiar. I've heard her in commercials, I think. But all right, hold on one second. We'll come right. Stay right there. We're going to come right back. Jen DeSalvo right now is going to tell us what's coming at the top of the hour news. All right, We have with us a rising star, Michael McInerney. Although we are, I'm trying to shape his career right now in front of his stage parents, and this is really, I'm like the agent that comes in and then takes him away. Most of those agents end up going to prison, though, as I seem to recall.
They kind of do.
Right.
You're sort of creeped out by those agents.
Right. Something really bad ends up happening, and then years later, Justin Timberlake doesn't make eye contact with other people. I don't know. It's very weird. The whole thing happens. But Michael McInerney is here. He's got a single and a B-side out right now that you can download off the interwebs. MichaelMacMusic.bandcamp.com. It's really great stuff. Very soulful. 18 years old. We've been hearing about you basically your entire life, young man. And you really are as advertised. You are this old soul built into this musical genius. Because on this on the record, he plays every instrument. That's like crazy, like beyond. It's that thing that happens to the guys who really do make it, and then you end up being not only just a great musician, but also a producer and all those other things to make great music. And that's what the world needs more of. Less pop stars and more musicians.
How about it? Well said.
Learn that on the Grammys, that is for sure. All right. So you want to do a little Ray Charles number for us, right?
Yes, I do.
All right. Take us out. Call the Ginger Blues right there.
You're not kidding. You're incredible.
That's your stage name, Ginger Blue.
Bubby.
Bubby, darling, sweetheart, listen. And he looks like a rock star, too.
He totally does.
He's got the whole thing. He's got the t-shirt. He's got the long ginger hair going.
Yeah.
I can see this right now. You know, Edgar Winter's got nothing on you, pal.
They're saying Ed Sheeran, some of the texters.
Yeah, like they're sort of an Ed Sheeran.
Feeling it a little bit.
Now, Ed Sheeran is an example of what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Ed Sheeran is a guy who can write a great pop song that everybody loves, but it's not a pop song, right?
Yeah, and he was on Clapton's latest album, which is like more than most people ever dream about.
Career, sure.
Yeah, that's true. Although, is Clapton on his own album now? I don't even know if he's on it. I don't think he is. Bubby, darling, we're going to call it the Eric Clapton Experience. I love it. All right. Well, if you want to go see this young impresario, and he really is. I mean, that's what he's a genius. He's a musical genius.
He is.
Like Stevie Wonder, because he plays all the everything. You can see him tomorrow night, actually, at Ballydoyle Pub in Downers Grove. And then he's going to be on the 22nd of February, which is a sainted day, which is a day that will live in infamy, I think I'm told, because it's Violetta's birthday, at the Score Sports Center Restaurant and Bar in Willow Springs. And you can go to buy the music at michaelmackmusic.bandcamp.com. He's got the new single out right now, michaelmackmusic.bandcamp.com. We'll be watching you.
Yes, we will, Michael. You got a big future. Thank you.
Thank you.
For sharing with us.
And it was nice to meet your parents, too. They're lovely people.
Yeah, they're okay.
Nice to meet you, Ro. Right.
Yeah, it's a nice. Thank you, Wendy. It was nice to meet you too, and Jimmy Mack too. We always hear about Jimmy
Me
Mack,
too.
But I'm telling you, I don't know. Save the sperms and the egg because you might be able to sell. But Bubby darling, listen. Could I buy some futures?
I don't want to hear about this.
That's so weird.
Did it get weird? Did it just get weird?
Yes, it took a weird turn there.
It got weird.
You're not kissing me later, Dad.
Damn it.
Don't give the Tom Brady kiss.
Oh,
that would get really weird. Because that kid was 11, but you're 18.